Morning.
Good morning.
Hey.
How is everyone?
Oh, well, Chris is having some mic troubles, so he's gonna, I don't know
Oh,
what he's
okay.
gonna do. He can hear me, but he can't t speak.
Chris, can you hear me?
Oh, he's gonna say, he said try again. Okay, so here goes nothing. All right. Hello,
Hi.
Chris.
Chris, we can see you.
We can see you. Hopefully, you can hear us, but we can't hear you. Turn off the mute button.
Put the microphone near your mouth.
Yes. Come on.
It doesn't even show that he's talking either.
Oh, it doesn't highlight the cat.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All right, let me hang up on him and then let him try it again.
Okay.
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, you're still there. Okay, good. I thought you hung up.
Oh, no, I'm here.
We can't hear. Are you having a party today or what?
No, not really.
Are you going to one?
No, Chris was just being silly.
Oh.
Oh, we're just gonna go grab something to eat kind of early and then come back here. Because
Chill.
yeah, Stacy's mom is watching the kids just while we eat, so that way she can go home and do whatever she wants to do.
Oh,
And
yeah.
then we'll just hang out, watch a movie or something like that. What about you?
Oh, we never go out. Well, I'll be lucky to make it past 10.
Yeah. Yeah,
Not fall
it's
asleep.
not a big deal for us either. We'll just I'll probably stay awake, but we'll probably just throw on a movie or two or whatever.
Yeah.
Finally saw Doctor Strange yesterday.
Did you like it?
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, I like it. It's
Yeah.
pretty neat.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting watching it with my wife because she doesn't know anything about Doctor
Yeah.
Strange. I'm not even sure if she heard of him.
I liked the origin part of it. Like some people got upset with it, but I liked the fact that it showed his arrogance as a doctor, you know? 'Cause
Oh,
that's always been
absolutely.
part of it, who he is. And I dig that.
I loved the whole origin thing. I mean, I don't think it's like a Batman or a Spider-Man where you're constantly seeing the origin over and over again. This is a character that most people don't know anything about in terms of origin story. And it was very cool to actually see on screen.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah, that was
So
a
now
pretty
I
good
think
film. Did you see Star Wars yet?
yeah,
Did you
I
like
saw it
it?
twice.
Oh, so I guess you did like it if you saw it twice. You at least enjoyed it.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. The
Yeah.
first viewing, I thought maybe it was leaning too much into humor. Like, I like some humor in the Star Wars movies, but I thought maybe it was doing too much humor, like silly type humor. But then when I watched it again, I'm like, no, it was good. I liked how it was.
Yeah, I didn't think the humor was overwhelming. Like a lot of people complained about the Poe Dameron scene with what's his name? I can never remember is the Admiral guy. But I think that's like perfect play to play on somebody's arrogance. Because people with egos
Oh,
like that,
on the phone when he was pretending that he was on hold. Yeah.
No, it
I
is
thought that
like
was funny.
it is so easy to break somebody down that has an egomaniac. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they fall into it every time.
No, that didn't bother me. Some of the stuff with like BB-8 and stuff, like just he's always there, like saving the day with, he's in one of those scout walkers and stuff like that. The first time I watched it, I'm like, well, this might be getting a little too silly. But then when I watched it again, I don't know what the difference was. I mean, obviously, I already knew what
Well,
to expect
I
the
heard a
second
lot
time,
of
but I liked it a
people that
lot.
liked it more the second viewing. Like, I was talking to Daryl and last night we talked a little bit about it, and he I think he well he liked it the same.
Did he?
It was Russ from Gotham by Geeks that said he liked it more the second time.
Yeah, I did too. I mean,
So
but obviously I didn't dislike it because I went to go see it a second time. You know what I mean? So I must have liked it in the first place, and I did. It was very good. It was very good.
it was very much mirrored Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi,
Yeah.
because
Yeah,
like the
it had
scene
things from
with
both.
it was so similar. I enjoyed it. I think your frame of mind matters too, like when you see it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I had just spoken to the day before one of my friends at work who had seen it, or the day before, and he didn't like it. He didn't really like The Force Awakens. He thought it was too much like the first Star Wars movie, and then now, so then when he watched this, he's like, I'm done. I don't like this. And so I went into it
Did he like
wondering,
Rogue One?
yes.
Yes. Okay. I could see where he's coming from,
I
because
do
a
too.
lo a lot of the Star Trek fans complain about the new Star Trek, except for the last one, but the first two, because it mimicked trying to recreate the old. Do you know what I mean? It
Yeah.
there were similar plots, like the Khan thing, and it was trying to create something for the new generation. And I think this was trying to do it too without creating new stuff, whereas Rogue One, it was all new to us, you know? I mean, maybe
I
not to the people that have been reading the books, but
no,
it
no,
was.
but I just rewatched Rogue One this week too,
Yeah,
for
I
the
did
first
too.
time. Did you? Yeah, for the first time since it came out.
I watched it again on Netflix for the third time.
I'm telling you, I told my wife, and I know it's kind of silly to say, but I have like the same emotional reaction as when I watch like Saving Private Ryan. And I know it's ridiculous because this is not, based on anything true. Saving Private Ryan is not a true story, but it's based on real events. And I know that nothing here is, but it still has the same
It's
emotional feel for me.
based on a fictional event that you loved, and
For
it
40
for
years.
40 years,
For 40 years, we knew that that rebel spies got the plans for the Death Star,
And it was
but you
just
never knew
so
anything
it
about
is
it.
so freaking awesome, though. It's like a little
Yeah.
band of people go to that planet and defy all odds, you know?
Exactly. And people that you would never think that would end up being heroes. And
It's
they're like
amazing.
unsung heroes that nobody ended up really knowing anything about except for the people involved. And it was so good. It was just so powerful.
I agree. That movie, God, it's got to be like in my top three Star Wars movies.
Oh God, it was incredible.
Cause I love Empire. Empire's my shit. But then I almost have to go with A New Hope next, because it just started everything for me as a kid, you know? Just to
I'm right with you. I'm right
and
with you.
and then I thought a lot about what the movies meant to me, and Rogue Squadron, I think, comes in three, just because I get emotional during it. Like, it hits a certain chord with me, and like the villain is really is solid in there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
Oh, yeah.
he is great as a scientific admiral, you know,
Yeah.
that's trying to work his way to the top, and is using people to do it. I think he's one of the great villains, you know.
I agree. It's funny that you said that because if somebody asked me my top three, it would be those three in the exact same order.
That's great minds think alike. No.
It's so true. And I know
I
you're a
don't
little bit older than me, but I mean, I was 5 when the first movie came out, and I mean, we went to go see it in the theater, and so like spending all these years, and I think it's funny because not to give anything away, but the events of this last the Last Jedi actually affected me emotionally more so than anything that happened in The Force Awakens. And I don't know. I think it just feels like it was the begin, from the beginning to the end of a story of, certain characters. And it's like, I don't know, I just felt really like after, not when I'm in the theater, but when I left and I was thinking about it, I felt really emotional about the fact that like I kind of grew up with that, and I know it's not totally over, but you know what I'm saying? I don't want to say anything to like spoil anything at this point, but yeah, it was very emotional.
Yeah, it was pretty powerful. I'm gonna try to
Oh,
call him again. He's not answering me.
all right, that's fine.
I'm one with the force. The force is with me. I'm one with the force. The force is with me. I'm
Yeah,
one... That he's such a great character. Those two, those bosom buddy guys.
was awesome.
Oh man.
And I'm sitting there like thinking about it like it's a real like real events. It's like that pilot, that Imperial pilot, like if he didn't decide that this isn't right and he doesn't have a conscience, then none of this would have happened. You know what I mean? I'm like actually like thinking about it like this was like real history, but it was so like powerful and emotional. It's like this guy who could have, I mean, just doing his job,
Well, all of
he's like,
them,
oh, this isn't right.
they made like
Yeah,
such a good team
all of them.
because they were all they were so different. They all had
Yeah.
different motives, but they all went in there knowing they were gonna die. I mean,
Oh
and
yeah.
the odds were totally against them. And it has some of the best scenes, like battle scenes I've seen. Like it's up there with Empire. Because when we're on the planet and all those ships are going around and the AT-ATs are going around and they're fighting on the ground, you have the rebels on the
Crazy.
ground. It's
And Mike,
amazing.
how about like when you see how friggin' scary Darth Vader actually is when he gets on that ship and he's just mowing down
Well,
person
I
after
get
person.
goosebumps when they board the ship again because it's like
So
one of
do
my fa-
I.
like when I was a kid, I was blown away. You have all these guys lining up and they're all gonna die, you know? They're fighting these stormtroopers, they're burning a hole in the wall. It's
Yeah.
like, holy
And
crap.
that shows how good the movie was because you know how this ends up because you saw Star Wars, 40 years ago, but I was still on the edge of my seat, like tense. Like, oh my God, they got to get these plans out of here. And like I'm like on the edge of my seat, but I know that it's going to happen because I've seen the movie it leads into.
And I
But it was
love
so
like
good.
the battering ram ships that just
Oh
said
yeah.
let's just ram this ship and push
Yeah.
it in.
Yep,
Take the shields out.
that was awesome too. What
Yeah.
the hell's Chris doing?
I don't know. I'm he's not answering me.
Where are you sending him? You send
On
him something at
Skype.
Skype? Oh, okay. He just messaged us. He said, "Okay, I'm good, I think."
Oh, okay.
In Messenger.
Yeah, let's give it a shot. Well, we had a good Star Wars discussion.
Exactly. Hello?
Hello.
Chris! Happy New Year.
Happy New
Happy
Year.
New Year. I
So,
swear
you
to
were having
God.
some technical difficulties.
Yeah. Fucking Windows, man. Somehow, in the privacy settings in Windows, the microphone was turned off. Like
Oh,
the
because you wouldn't want anyone to hear you when you're on Skype. well, you probably
Yeah, so
did a update of software recently, and maybe you answered one of the questions wrong.
I didn't. I Windows has updated since the last time that we recorded, but I didn't answer any questions
But you
in
know
that
how they have
process.
that Corina or whatever it is, Cortana.
Yeah.
There was options on the last update to turn on certain things and disable certain things. At least for me, there was.
Or was there? Yeah.
Maybe it tied into that somehow, but yeah. So let apps use my microphone was turned off, and then even when I turned it on, then I had to actually Skype was still turned off, so I had to turn Skype on specifically let it use it.
Well, we're glad you could join us.
Absolutely. Thanks.
You probably
and then
haven't
for some
seen...
reason I was sending you messages through the chat and Skype, and they're still just hanging. Sending status. Yeah. Stupid technology.
You probably hadn't seen Star Wars anyway, so we were just chatting up Star Wars.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Mostly Rogue Squadron.
Yeah, have you seen Rogue Squadron?
Mm-hmm.
Rogue One? Yeah, that was... Oh, God.
Yeah, Rogue One is what it's called, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I keep calling them Rogue Squadron.
We were talking... Yeah, we started talking about the new movie, and then we really discussed more Rogue One because we both just recently rewatched it.
We had the same order of movies. We said Empire was our favorite, Star Wars mm-hmm. A New Hope was our second, and then Rogue One was our third. So we had the same.
Yeah, same top three, same order.
Same order, which is pretty unique. At least I think it is. I've seen some people's top 10, and they're not that.
Yeah.
Empire is usually at the top.
Sure.
For most Star Wars people.
I think it deserves to be.
Man, those AT-ATs, those enhanced AT-ATs in the new movie, they just like dwarf. I mean, they're huge. Because they have like there's scenes where they have the regular AT-AT and they're like 50 times bigger. I mean, they're huge. I couldn't believe how small the regular AT-AT looked. I wonder if they're going to make a toy.
Oh, God. Can you
because
imagine?
I do not own an AT-AT. I own what are the smaller ones called?
I know what you're talking about. Those are the walkers with the two legs.
Yeah,
right?
I have one of those. And I have the playset that was the cardboard playset with an AT-AT on it.
Okay.
It was like a Hoth playset. Uh-huh. But I don't have a full-blown AT-AT. And I've stopped getting toys, but I sure would like to add an AT-AT. I have two Millennium Falcons. I have the first generation Millennium Falcon, and then I have another one that's in the box still.
Wow. I've got the first one, the first generation, but it's missing the whatever you call it, the door that goes down so people can walk up into the ship.
Yeah,
it's missing the sensor array. It's missing the actual gun turret. The only thing that still is on there is the cockpit lid or cover, as well as the big cover. Everything else is like gone out of that.
The
thing.
Only thing that I've lost is the stickers over time.
Oh my
lost
God.
They've
That's
come off.
Pretty impressive.
But also the sound doesn't work anymore.
Oh,
I was
no,
disappointed.
Yeah.
I put some batteries in and I'm like, damn it. No. I was always anal about my dad always taught me when you have battery operated toys to take the batteries out. Like, don't let them rust
corrode.
In there and mm-hmm. the acid destroy your toy. So I was always mm-hmm. good about taking them out. So, like, my X-Wing still makes the sound. Like, I have an X-Wing.
Nothing of mine still makes the sounds.
Yeah. I never had a... I have a TIE fighter. I don't have the Vader ship.
I didn't realize it at the time, but in retrospect, I was extremely spoiled.
Yeah.
I had practically everything. I got the AT-AT for Christmas one year. I mean, it was like literally almost the only toy that I got.
Do you still have that?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw one on sale that was beat up. Like at our mall, they have like a retro toy place. And I was just walking Barb by and I was saying, I got that. And everything I had was in way better shape.
Yeah.
But, man, it would be nice to have an AT-AT. But if there's going to be an AT-AT from this movie, I think I wouldn't get it. Even though I don't want to get... The other thing I was a sucker for was the speeder. The new speeder that that has the skitter on the ground, or if they
Yep.
come out with that ship or the bomber, I think I'm gonna buy those because
Really?
I just think they're awesome.
Yeah.
The
That's
bomber
cool.
reminded me of the World War II bombers. It was awesome because they
Yeah,
had the
the
turret on
bombers are.
the they had the one turret on the bottom, and then they
Yep.
just had the bomb. They were just to deliver the payload. Yeah.
I think my Darth Vader TIE fighter's fine, but the other one, like one of the, you know how the wings would pop out?
Yeah.
They would fall off.
You'd hit the
So
button and then it'd explode.
that attach the little part that would attach in there, on one of the wings is not cracked off, but it's cracked 3/4 of the way. Like it just kind of hangs by
Yeah.
one side now. But yeah.
I do think I have one thing that a lot of people, the Star Wars fans, don't have, and it's
See if I have it. What is it?
during Empire Strikes Back, they had a cut out the backs of these things and send away for, but it was
Yeah.
like a Hoth accessories, and they were
Yes, I
like,
have it.
"Oh, you
No,
have
I
it?"
don't. Hoth is that? Well, did it come with the Dagobah stuff, like the backpack?
Yeah, it came with the
Okay, yes,
backpacks. It
I have that, yeah.
came with all the masks, like
Yes. Oh, yeah, for when they were inside that
extra
thing.
guns and stuff
Yes, I have that.
when they were inside the asteroid. Like, I don't think a lot of people sent away for that, but I guess you did.
So funny. I was a freak with Star Wars. I really was.
Did you have a bunch of rebel and snow troopers? That's what I did. I bought
Yeah,
like I
I had
bought
a I
10
had I
I
didn't have a
bought 10 of
lot, but I had a
each.
couple. I had a couple. And I had about three stormtroopers, I'd say, three or four
Yeah,
stormtroopers.
yeah. They're amazing
Just
toys, though. They really are. If you get a chance, see that documentary on Netflix, The Toys That Made Us.
I did. I watched the first two episodes so far.
Oh, did you watch the Barbie?
Yeah, because I
No.
watched them both with Stacey, and I mean, she was very interested in that
No,
one. And
that
I
was
thought it was
fast.
very,
That was the
yeah, it was
best.
really
That
good.
was the best one. Just learn about the people.
Yeah, super interesting.
I had no idea.
And she liked it, of course, because she's like, oh, I had that one. I had that one. Sort of like, you know, we're doing with the Star Wars stuff.
Well, I had
She
no
was.
idea that Barbie was made from a porn doll, like a man's doll. Like, I had no idea.
I.
And I didn't know they had Ken with genitalia. Imagine if you had the prototype.
That would just be
With Ken
not
with a dick.
right. What? It's just so odd.
I was gonna skip the Barbie and just move on to He-Man or whatever was next, but I'm so glad I didn't because I watched them all and my favorite was Barbie.
Yeah, I watched them based on that thread on Facebook where everyone was raving about that episode. I'm like, all right, well,
Yeah.
I'm definitely gonna watch it then.
The Star Wars one I had already knew because there's so much on it already. Don't the
I
only
didn't
thing I
know a lot about the actual company and like what do you call it? The contract that they originally had that Hasbro
that was new to me
totally
because
screwed up.
they but they screwed up so many contracts and all these toy things.
Yeah,
The
tell Chris about that contract because I don't
Barbie
think
guy
he's.
made a fortune. The guy who he used to work for Raytheon, which is a space company, and do rocket design. And then he went and did a toy design, which is the Barbie prototype, and he wrote himself into the contract to make a lot of money. He even built himself a castle.
Wow,
And he had four
that's smart.
wives. He had four wives, and he committed suicide because he started to do a lot of coke and all kinds of stuff, and they started to not
Yeah,
give.
jeez.
The creator of Barbie, the woman that drove the thing, went to prison. She was a shyster. I mean,
When they started doing poorly as a company, she started, like,
fiddling the
from what I
books, the
understand,
shipping.
like a ton of toys. They'd ship out to another, like, whatever, another county, and then just bring them back or something, and then count those as if they were shipped out. And
Yeah.
so it's like totally like fraud. And yeah, so
And she got
she was
caught.
kicked out.
They didn't mention her husband going to jail. It was just her.
Just her, yeah.
So maybe her husband didn't know about it, but there were so many interesting things there. Like, I didn't even know about the Barbie that had the arms where you'd pump the arm in and the breasts would grow.
That was disturbing too.
Holy moly!
Like, why would anyone think that's something? Oh God, it's so funny. But yeah, that first contract that Kenner had with Lucas, what they were only giving them the what,
They
like
only got like
5% or
between
something?
20th Century Fox
And Lucas.
and Lucas, I think it was 15% or less. So they
I think
had,
it was less. I think it was like 5%.
well, it's 5 for Lucas. I think Fox had 5,
Oh,
so it's
okay.
like 10. But they
So
had,
Kenner was
Kenner
making
was making the
so
entire
much money
profit
out of this
because
stuff.
no toy company wanted to take a chance. No, none of them did. And then it was such a big hit. And then as the movies faded, they let the contract expire, which was a
Well, that
bad
was when
thing
Hasbro took
because then
over.
they got control. They got control of the contract again because it's very much like, I think, like the Wonder Woman contract and stuff like that, where if they stop publishing something, that'll go back to the rights of the owner.
Right.
And it went back to Lucas, and then they had to renegotiate, and then
And this time.
they didn't own the pie anymore.
Yeah.
But it was cool because they had my Battlestar Galactica ships in there because they talked about Boba Fett's rocket, that how
Yes.
it
Yeah.
originally launched, and they
Yeah.
said they pulled it because of the Battlestar
And you know what's crazy? In a pre-internet like time frame and so forth, I knew that story. I
Yeah.
actually knew that like somebody like some kid got it lodged in their throat, and then all of a sudden nobody else could have shooting parts
Yeah.
for the longest time. That was
I
cool though.
love the
Did you send
Viper
away
in
for
this.
Boba Fett too?
No, I didn't. I have a
Oh.
Boba. I have a. Do you have the original?
Well, I have the one. Yeah, I have the one that I sent away for, but it didn't launch or anything. It was already fixed.
I have a Boba Fett, but I'm pretty sure I didn't send away for him because I caught on to the toys pretty late.
Oh, okay.
I think most of my original Star Wars figures, like Ben Kenobi, R2, Princess Leia, all the originals, Han Solo, they're all second generation.
Okay. That's still cool though.
Yeah.
That's some cool toys.
Yeah, the only thing I ever sent away for was the Empire Strikes Back set.
That's awesome.
It was like a weapons kit. It came with like a bunch of accessories.
Yeah, it was just a bunch, yeah, like you said, a lot of accessories. Like nothing as exciting as a figure, but yeah, I still.
I hope they do more because I would love to see one on Mego, like, because that was a big part of my kid.
Oh,
Or
yeah.
Big Jim. They mentioned Big Jim because that was their. They mentioned it in the G.I. Joe one, I think. I
Oh,
can't
do they?
remember. Yeah. It's either that
See?
one or. No, it's the. They mentioned Big Jim in the He-Man one. But those toys were a big part of my life. Like I didn't own a G.I. Joe, but I had the entire pack, Big Jim's pack.
Yeah.
And they were awesome. They were dolls where you can like flex their muscles and stuff, and each one had like you had Torpedo Fist. His fist would come out. You had a doctor, God, I can't remember, Dr. Steel, who would do like this he had a silver hand and he'd do like a karate chop. And then you had a Native American that was had bows and arrows and stuff called, I think his name was Warpath. And then you had the whip. He was awesome.
That's so
But
funny because that
I
just
still have
shows
those.
it just shows like the few at that time when you're young, what the difference is between like our ages, because all
Yeah.
that stuff that was before my time.
But
I didn't have any of
you
those.
probably had a few He-Mans, right?
Oh, I had lots of He-Man, yeah, because
See,
that
I
was like
didn't.
early
So,
80s, I
like,
think.
of all those toys in the documentary, I only own the Star Wars. Like,
Oh, wow, okay.
I don't have any Barbies. I don't have any He-Mans, not one He-Man, and I didn't have any what was the fourth one?
G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe. Yeah, I didn't own one G.I. Joe. My
Did
brother
they
did.
get into the like the small figure G.I. Joes, or were they just talking about the big huge ones.
They talked about the small. It was mostly small. They had Larry Hama and all the designers. I mean, they had the. They talked about how the family that owned that company had started with the original G.I. Joe, the bearded one.
Mm-hmm.
And how you need to see it because it's really worth watching both of them.
Oh yeah, I definitely will. But yeah, G.I. Joe was a big thing for me as a kid. That Transformers, He-Man.
That's the age difference.
Yep.
Because I was coming out of toys when that stuff started to come out, and I didn't even watch the cartoons. So like, of those properties, the only one that grew on me was G.I. Joe. Like, I still collect G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, from IDW.
The comics?
Yeah. I didn't buy it back in the Marvel days. I just tried it when they relaunched, and I liked it, so I stuck with it.
Oh, that's funny.
And then my brother bought G.I. Joe back in the day. And
how old is he?
He's 3 years younger than me, so He gave me all of his comics during one Christmas, so I own a lot of the G.I. Joe run now.
Mm-hmm. He collected
G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, and I didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was happy about that. But yeah, the toys that made us.
it's a good show.
Yeah. I think you'll like the other two.
Oh, I'm sure I will.
I liked some of the creators in the G.I. Joe because they were like bullshit artists and they admitted it. Like, they'd go into meetings and the toy stores would ask them all these questions, and they had one guy that could just bullshit. He would just make up stuff and then they'd have to make it reality. Like, I've seen that happen, though, in real life. Like, I always call it vaporware, like in the software world, where they're like, yes, we got it. We can make it happen. But anyway, that's
funny.
What was your toy of choice, Chris, as a kid, of any of those properties?
I think my first one of that type was Star Wars. And then G.I. Joe. Those are the two biggest ones, I think. I had some He-Man also. But
did you have Star Wars Stinkor? Was the first
one. Did I have what?
Stinkor.
Stinkor?
Yeah, Stinkor. He's a skunk. He's a skunk man.
I have one.
Yes.
He actually
I have one, Mike. I gave it to my kids just within the past year. I said, smell them.
Does he still stink?
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, you know what's interesting is they said that it stunk the factory up so much when they made Stinkor that it was getting their employees sick.
Really?
Yeah. I can't believe they did that. But I was surprised in Disney, and they had like a Bug's Life tree in Florida, and they had like a 4D movie, which makes things like reality via the chairs and other things, and they had a stink bug and it smelled like shit, man. They like they make a stinky the bug essentially farts, and then the gas blows into the audience and it smells awful.
I guess I remember that.
Yeah. When it comes to stinkiness, I don't know why. Like, I could see a scratch and sniff where you want to scratch it, but it's like, here's a butthole. Scratch it and sniff it. No, it's like.
Oh.
Did you have any accessories, Chris? Did you buy any of the vehicles or the play sets?
For Star Wars, I don't think I had many, maybe because I was more on the tail end of things, probably. I know I had the Darth Vader case for keeping the figures.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I never had that.
But
I only had the straight ones.
Yeah, I don't remember having any vehicles or accessories for Star Wars. For G.I. Joe, I had a whole bunch.
Mm-hmm.
I had the big, I don't know what it's called, but it was this big mobilized transport vehicle. that was beige in color, and I had that one, like one of those long helicopters,
Oh yeah.
those transport
The
helicopters. I had
Cobra
that.
helicopter or the G.I. Joe helicopter?
No, it was a Joe,
Oh, okay.
one. But yeah, I had probably the, when it comes to accessories and stuff like that, I probably had the most, for G.I. Joe. I'm looking at a page now, so I can try to find the actual name of the ones that I had, but that was probably the one that I had the most for, was G.I. Joe. I
Yeah.
had, a handful of the smaller vehicles too, but those ones I mentioned are the ones that I remember because they're the biggest.
I'm curious what the transport is now that I saw the documentary.
Yeah,
'Cause
I'll
they have
find it
two
here.
really large toys. The one is the aircraft carrier and the other one is it's like a space shuttle or of some sort that the Joe ones had. They were huge. They were like $100 ships.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
I
didn't
didn't get
have either of
either one of
those.
those, no.
I know what you're talking about, though.
I had an aircraft carrier that was big, but it wasn't a Joe one. It was one that launched planes off of it with a rubber band. I remember it. It was just some generic military toy.
The helicopter that I was talking about was the Tomahawk.
Oh, okay.
Came out in 1986, and it
The
was
guy who flew it had a cowboy hat, right? I
yeah, was
forget.
that Wild Bill?
Wild
No,
Bill.
it came with lift. It came with lift ticket.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
I thought
my
Wild
brother
Bill
had a helicopter that
flutes the
came with Wild
helicopter.
Bill, I think
Yeah.
his name was.
Yeah, this is one of those long helicopters that have two blades,
Oh, okay.
or two rotators that are used for like transporting troops and stuff like that in real life. And let's see here. Okay, and then the following year, I knew it couldn't be too much longer because it was, only a certain period of time. It was the Mobile Command Center. It came out in 1987. Came with the driver steamroller. It was a dude with a ball cap, and he just has like a vest over his with no shirt on underneath it. But yeah, this thing was pretty big.
Mobile Command Center. Well, I did a one on without G.I. Joe in it, and there's a whole bunch of realistic ones.
Yeah. Yeah, like all folds up so that you can like roll it along as a vehicle, but then when you
Oh, that is a big one.
and then it that unfolds and it has like multiple layers. That was definitely the biggest Joe toy that
It doesn't even look like it rolls, but it has the tank tractors. I guess there's tires under the tractor tread.
Yeah, I think they're underneath.
It looks pretty cool. They did not show this one on the show. Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely the once I had that was definitely the center of my my Joe play sessions.
Yeah,
But I don't
I used to
think
love
probably
playing
wasn't
with
too much
G.I.
longer
Joe.
after that I don't know how much longer after that I was into it though. So I
Yeah.
don't think there was anything really that came out after that that I had that was big. So that was probably like the Tomahawk was probably like a Christmas present the one year, and then the following year the Mobile Command Center was probably like my big present.
Yeah.
Yes. The
The toys that made us.
Yeah. All right,
toys
so
that we
you
made
wanna
out with.
They made a lot of money, that's for sure.
Yeah.
My brother destroyed all his toys. That was part of his thing. Me, I was anal retentive with my toys. So all my things, it even exists why I didn't buy the case that you did, because I didn't like the curvature of it. Like I could only fit the small figures in the corners. And it bothered me, so I never bought the case with the Darth Vader case or the C-3PO case. I always bought the straight ones because it was just a standard size and you could fit any
Well, when you say
character.
the straight one, was it the vinyl one with the
Yeah,
picture?
yeah,
Okay,
yeah.
that's what I had as well.
I have like three cases that are filled with figures. I mean, I played with them. I didn't keep any in the packages until later, but much later.
I've got a Darth Maul first edition in the package. You want to buy it for like a dollar?
I think I have it. So I bought toys again back when they rellaunched Episode One. So I have a lot of the figures, but they're all in the cases. I never took them out after
I
that.
know, and ironically, those aren't worth anything at all.
Yeah.
Even though we all have them in our, well, probably because everyone has them in their cases.
They did have some cool stuff though. Like they had some new releases during that time of the Sand People's the thing they rode. I forget what they called them.
A bantha.
Banthas, yeah. I have a Bantha and it's
I
awesome.
never had a Bantha, and I never had. Oh, now it just
A
escaped me.
Rancor.
No, what's the one that
A
the lizard thing
Wampa?
that? No, the lizard
Oh,
that the stormtroopers
a
ride.
dang a
Starts
Dengar.
with a D. Does start with a D, doesn't
I think it's a Dengar, I think.
No. Chris, help us out.
What are you trying to figure out?
That lizard, the big lizard thing wait, oh, I almost had it. That the stormtroopers ride and Tatooine.
I have that. I have that.
The
With the
Dewback.
saddle, Dewback, Patrol Dewback.
Yeah. I never had one of those either, but I always wanted one.
I don't have a Wampa.
I have a Wampa.
No Wampa.
It sounds like we're just making up words.
Yeah. I don't have anything anymore. I sold everything.
At least you
Did you?
sold it.
I sold my Transformer, a bunch of my Transformers, and I sold a lot of my G.I. Joe, but I refused to sell any of my Star Wars toys.
I haven't sold any yet. At some point, I'm going to do it.
I got some good money from a lot of the Transformer ones because I kept the boxes and the styrofoam that they were enclosed in and stuff, but
Yeah, I have almost a full superpowers collection. I'm missing a few of the obscure ones that I could never find at Toys R Us, but
Yeah, I've
the
got the
main line
common ones.
I have all of them.
Yeah, I got a lot of the common ones, but I don't have any of a lot of the later ones I didn't even know they made until I saw like years later on TV or
And I have a
on
lot
the
of the
internet.
first generation Secret Wars. I didn't like those though. I didn't like the
Neither did
shield with
I.
the holograph. I just thought they were the lamest like action figures I've ever seen.
Well, because they came out at around the same time as the superpowers figures, and they were like night and day in terms of
Right,
quality.
one had articulation, the other one didn't. Yeah,
And
I don't.
Kenner made the superpower ones too, didn't they?
Yeah, I think
They made
so.
some good action figures back in the day.
Yeah, they
They
did.
really did.
I think Mattel made the superpower, the Secret Wars.
And those were cheap.
I didn't even like the shields though. They bugged me. Like I was like I was an older kid when they came out and I was like, why do these characters have shields? Cap has a shield. Why do they have this holographic shield? It's ridiculous.
I didn't like that. I didn't like, I think some of the characters,
Like
if not all of
no
them.
one had a cape. No
That's
one.
exactly what I was just going to say, is I couldn't remember
Yeah.
if some had a cape or not, but like Dr. Doom, where's his cape?
Yeah.
He looks ridiculous.
There
Oh,
was a lot
man.
like that.
Yeah.
I don't think I really ever had any superhero toys.
No?
Strangely enough.
Yeah.
I
You
started
like
with the I
superheroes,
started with
Chris.
the I started with the Mego dolls, so I have a lot of the Mego dolls. And the only thing that missing off of those are the stickers, 'cause they wore out. I like the new Mego dolls, the retro Mego dolls come with extra stickers. I like that, but
Do they
I haven't
really?
bought them. Yeah.
Huh.
Because they still have the retro feel and it comes with like an extra like Shazam will have like an extra thunderbolt that you put on his chest.
Oh,
Because
that's
the
cool.
that those are they stick on cloth because the Mego dolls were on cloth and
Right.
they wear out quicker like the R on the Robin and some of the plastic belts had broke because the belts were made very flimsy. Like Green Arrow has the whole harness with his arrows, and that's that the buck but the belt buckle broke.
I vaguely remember having a small handful, maybe two or three Mego figures, but then I think they went out of business when I was probably only like 6 years old or something like that.
Yeah, I had two cars. I had the Arrow car, and I had the Spider-Man, the spider buggy. The Arrow car shot an arrow out of the tip of the car. The spider buggy had like this web that hangs off the back, where you could like drop the web, and it would you could like capture another Mego
Oh, that's cool.
figure. Yeah.
I really know them most just from the ads in the old comic books.
Oh yeah. If you buy an old comic book, you see Heroes World.
Heroes World.
If you
Hand
never,
drawn.
yeah, if you ever get a copy of those are pretty cool catalogs because they were about comic book size and they were about the same thickness and they were all about superhero toys. So you could buy like a lot of different superhero accessories and stuff.
That's
Like
cool.
there was my favorite Christmas ever. Gift wise was when my parents bought me like a bunch of Mego dolls that you could never get at the store. Like they ordered it from the catalog from Heroes World, and like you would never see like the Falcon or Green Arrow or any of those obscure type Mego dolls, and I had a whole bunch of them
Those
because
were always the ones
my
that I
parents
wanted,
or
because I
ordered them
just didn't know
from
who they
yeah
were.
they ordered them from the catalog. So yeah,
That's
they're
awesome.
Those Mego dolls are cool. And then I had a $6 million man, of course, but I didn't have any of the other characters. I didn't have an Oscar Goldman or what was the villain? I can't remember, but he was a Maskatron, I think, was the villain. But it's cool.
Yeah.
I have a couple of Micronauts and Shogun Warriors, but they're the miniaturized metal ones.
I don't have any Shogun Warriors. I actually I don't even think I have any Micronauts anymore, but I had them when I was a kid.
I only had like three Micronauts and they came apart. They were made, they were the
They
ones
were
that you could assemble that I had.
with the magnets.
Yeah.
I had Baron Karza and whatever the name of the white guy was, and both of their horses.
Yes. I had Baron Karza and the white one too.
And
But I
I did have Biotron, that big guy.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Oh,
Because I remember playing with that.
Biotron was the guy you could fit a
A
little
little guy
Micronaut
in.
in the chest, right? Yeah. Matter of fact, when they came out with the comic book on IDW, they had Biotron. I thought that was pretty cool.
And he needed batteries. Like he would actually, I can't remember if he moved on his own with this because he had treads. Like you could convert him into like a vehicle type thing, or if he just lit up and stuff. But I remember that he was mechanical in some way. That was a lot of fun. Mike, are you still there?
Yeah.
I kind of want to put gloves on even though I'm inside the house.
Isn't that
Oh,
cold?
it's so cold out.
Really?
Over here it's
No, I
17,
mean
but
you, but
you're
you're cold
probably
inside the house
cold.
too.
Yeah,
Yeah.
well, it's like 10 degrees out. I mean, I got the heat on, but my hands and feet are always freezing in the winter. Like right, I have socks, slippers, and a blanket over my feet. So they're
Still
not that
cold.
bad, but I need like gloves
You need a
and
heating pad.
I need like stuff for my hands too.
Yeah. Oh, it's been brutal. And later in the week, Chris, it's like the high on one day is like six later in the week.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm gonna have to hire somebody to sit on my hands.
You could probably get them to pay you if you can find some sort of like freaky person.
That's
Yeah.
true.
Of course, they put their middle finger up and put it up his butt, but.
Hey, you know what? His hand, as long as his hands are still warm.
As long
no,
as...
I'm not gonna sit on their hands, Mike.
Right. He's gonna sit.
They're gonna sit on my hands.
Right.
So
okay. Yeah.
I can control what the fingers are doing.
Yeah, but that might be part of the deal, too, so you can get your money.
It might keep my fingers even warmer. You know,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That'll be
they
perfect.
They might be pretty stinky, though.
Wear rubber gloves.
I guess it's a trade-off.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, real quick, Mike, this isn't retro, but I wanted to tell you because I mentioned it to Chris yesterday. But I read the Harbinger Wars 2 yesterday.
Yeah, I got mine.
And it's set, the events that are in it are set literally in the town right next to mine.
Yeah, I saw your post. I saw
That's
it.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
But then I looked up where, because I sent Matt Kent a thing. I sent him a tweet, but he hasn't responded yet. But then I looked him up, and Chris, he was born in Cheektowaga.
Who
he was?
Matt Kent. Yeah. I couldn't. That's another town right
That's
outside of Boston.
I didn't realize that.
I know. So I don't know when he moved. He might have moved when he was a kid.
Did you just get one copy or two?
I only got one.
Yeah, born Cheektowaga, New York.
Yeah. So he must, because I asked him, I'm like, why did you choose that obscure town? Did you, like, I'm like, do you know it or is it random? But then I see that he grew up, or at least was born here. I don't know how long he lived here, but it's kind of cool.
I thought it was just going to be like, I just chose it randomly. Stop bothering me, weirdo.
Well, that's what I figured he was going to say, too, honestly. But knowing that, depending on how long he actually lived here, it would be cool if they got him to come for a convention or something like that.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. Now, he's one, based on what I've seen of what you've gotten in the past, Mike, that I would definitely get a... would ask a commission from.
Oh yeah, I've been really happy with his commissions.
Yeah, this stuff is awesome.
Didn't he do Mr. Miracle or something for you?
Yeah, and Big Barda.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Yeah. They're good characters for him to do.
Yeah, they really are. You picked some good characters for him to do. No doubt.
Yep, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you want to start getting into comics?
Sure.
So my pick this for all of us to read. I don't know if everybody got around to it, but it was Action Comics 584. And I just picked it. The reason I picked it was because I've been such on a She-Hulk John Byrne kick, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna go reread the Action Comics John Byrne stuff. And this was the first one that was released. And when Superman was re-released after Crisis, I was like so into John Byrne doing Superman. Like, I had known John Byrne from Fantastic Four and Alpha Flight and all that stuff. And when he came over, I was like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Especially from FF, because that's when I started collecting like a Marvel comic like regularly. Was John Byrne's Fantastic Four. I still had the spinner racks back then and all that good stuff. And this one is a unusual tale. It's a tale that is about sort of like mind control or swapping minds, which is very interesting because I was reading a lot of Headmen this week. But this has some weird stuff, and if you ever read like John Byrne stuff, he's got some weird shit that happens, especially around the Big Barda and Mr. Miracle stuff. Around 592, like I love this 592 and 593 stories because it has such a weird sensibility for people reading comic books at that time. It's like, I'm going to come into your house and show you a video of your wife having sex with Superman. Yeah, he was being mind controlled, but Darkseid shows up with the VHS and says, look what happened here. Bart is
as
fucking
he, as he
Superman.
Would.
Sits on his couch. I mean, imagine the horror, though. Like, that's like one of the worst tortures you could have. You love somebody so much, and they said, okay, here's your wife, and she's fucking Superman. Well, this one has a controversial scene, and if taken out of context, it's very weird because it's, like, very sexual towards Donna Troy. And it people that saw the I posted the panel on Facebook and they're like, holy crap, but it was taken out of context because it's really a story about some geeky kid who has like a muscular degenerative disease that builds a device who's able to swap minds with Superman. And when he does so, he starts destroying things and fighting the Teen Titans. He actually takes apart Cyborg pretty much. He takes off a leg and an arm, uh-huh. and he knocks out Beast Boy. He crushes Donna, and it really looks hopeless until Jericho gets there and gets control of his body. And is able to gain control, and then Superman breaks out of his prison, and he's in the handicapped guy's body, and he comes, and they're able to switch bodies back. But it's an interesting story, and the art is fantastic. What did you guys think?
I loved it. I haven't read that particular issue since it first had been released, so I mean it was cool to, I mean it was a very straightforward type story, like,
yeah,
you know, you've seen those mind swap, yeah, I mean, seen them a lot, but it was just so great to see, to go back and read a John Byrne written and drawn comic. I'm like you, I used to, I absolutely, after Crisis, because I got all of the Crisis issues, then I became not all in on, I couldn't afford to get every single DC comic book, but I bought comic books like Superman and so forth that I would just buy here or there on the newsstand when I felt like it. You know, now I was actually collecting those, and it was just great to go back to them. And but yeah, it was a lot of fun to read.
Did you get a chance to read it, Chris?
Yeah, I've read this a few times too. And partially out of curiosity, because it was the first, you know, the beginning of the post-crisis Superman. It kind of, for a while, of course, they Action Comics kind of took the place of DC Comics Presents as the team-up book, but it does kind of take a different approach. It's not really a team-up so much as well, as we described with the plot, it's more of a conflict, although there was obviously plenty of those kind of things in DC Comics Presents where there'd be some kind of misunderstanding, as they often do in team-up books and comics. But, yeah, I mean, I like John Byrne, too. And I thought that the reasons that the guy did the body swap made it a bit more interesting than your typical body swap, because sometimes I get kind of irritated with body swap stories when it involves Superman, because Superman's so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know exactly what bothers me about it, but maybe because there's a lot of them, because it's a well that a lot of writers have gone to because Superman's so powerful. So that if somebody, it's always, it's that what if scenario. If you're not going to straight up, you're not going to straight up make Superman evil, but if you have somebody else in control of his body, then you can see technically Superman doing things that he normally wouldn't do, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's something that we've seen a lot, but I do think that the character having some physical disabilities was kind of a interesting twist on it. That it wasn't just somebody with an evil villain or something like that. Somebody had taken control of him. But also, I wonder if John Byrne, knowing John Byrne, was also kind of like making fun of people that are the type of disabilities. People that read comics. Not people that have disabilities.
I know, like, I'm just kidding.
Hey, yeah. Who knows? But I was thinking more of like him making fun of like geeky comic book readers and stuff, and not and that side of the characters.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
He could be doing that. Mm-hmm. I could see that. Superman gives him a nice word balloon speech at the end. He gives him like lots of examples. Well, there's all these people that had a disability, and they. They contributed to society.
Yeah. Yeah, he does a good job of keeping Superman, the actual Superman, on the right moral plane for Superman to be on, you know?
Yeah.
With his attitude, his reaction to everything. But I think it was a decent kickoff for this new era of Action Comics. But yeah, like Mike said, there would be even weirder stuff to come from Byrne. You know, the Barda thing's the best example of it, but like you said, there is, like, he's definitely trying to play with your expectations a little bit here by having him you know, act in a way that you wouldn't expect Superman to act, but
yeah, it was cool. Whatever happened to John Byrne?
He's still doing Star Trek books for IDW. See? But
he's doing
ones where he doesn't draw them. They he uses photo references, and they put dialogue with it, and he tells new stories.
So why is he doing that?
Well. It's interesting how artists have, like, Jerry Ordway said this, like, there was a post by one of the artists, I can't even think what his name is, he said something like, man, DC's treating me well, and he's like, he replied back, and he says, yeah, they treat you good, but then once your style or stuff goes out, it's hard to get a job with them ever again, so take it, enjoy it while you have it, you know?
Interesting.
Jerry Ordway said that, and, like, Jerry Ordway's art is, like, whew, I love it. Like, even to this day, Adventures of Superman was, I love his art. Like, he did Power of Shazam. It, like, really stands out. There was something I read recently, and his art showed up, and I'm trying to think of what it was. But he's one of my favorite artists, and like when he posts like a sketch, I was like, God, I would love to get a commission from Ordway, because every time I see them, they're just like, they're amazing. But I wish somebody would hire him. Like, the last time I've seen some of his work has been in Dark Horse Comics Presents. I wish he would come and do more. Byrne has an attitude and stuff where people don't like to work with them. That's what I think. But
that's what I was wondering, because you know, you hear that more than once from different people. So then you're like, well, the only thing in common is obviously that person. So you tend to start to wonder if that's the case. And was it that he was just so hot, you know, years ago that, you know, you just tolerate that because you know that, you know, having him on a book is going to sell lots of books, but then maybe down the road, he's not as hot anymore, and who wants to deal with his nonsense if you're not getting he's the bang for your buck.
He's been in the IDW world for a while. Like, he's even launched some self-published titles and stuff.
Yeah.
And he had, like, for Dark Horse, the Next Men for a while.
Yeah, that's what I was, the next. I think it might have even done one of them with IDW, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, he relaunched, I think, some of his Charlton stuff with them, and he's done a lot of different books. They've had various degrees of success. They don't usually last longer than 6 issues. Some of them are 3, but his art style still, like, a lot of artists change style over the years. It's you can still tell it's his, you know.
Absolutely.
He still has the distinctive style. He still does the cheat on the backgrounds from time to time, where you'll notice even in this issue, some of the backgrounds, you'll see buildings and such, and then when you see a zoom in, there's no background at all.
Right, yep.
Like, the one panel that I was talking about is Superman as he's choking Donna Troy, and he says, "Foolish, foolish girl, how easy it would be to snuff you out, your life now, but perhaps I won't kill you. Not just yet, at least. You're very beautiful, Wonder Girl. There are other things we can do before you die. We can learn if a beautiful woman can suffer as I have suffered, scoffed at all the world's beautiful women." So he's saying that he was laughed at by other beautiful women, so he might torture her or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's interesting. Cyborg was pretty cool in this because he never gave up. Yeah, he was disassembled, he came to the rescue.
Beast Boy just didn't do a whole lot though, did he?
He stomped on him.
He got knocked out immediately.
He stomped on him and then he got taken out immediately.
Yeah, right away.
As an elephant, he let him have it, and then he got it. Superman grabbed his nose, and then he was out for the count.
Right.
But he did, like, have his head, like, underneath his hoof.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a fun issue.
It's a good story. It was. And it made me think, I think we might have discussed this before, but I think that for myself, like, I don't care that I think it's fine at this point that Cyborg's in the Justice League and stuff, but I would have liked to have seen him, you know, even in New 52, even in flashback or something like that, acknowledge, like, have him in the Teen Titans and actually see the story of him kind of like graduating from Teen Titans to Justice League. And I know that in the new continuity, he was never in the Teen Titans, so that could, you know,
that's
that couldn't
because
be done. But
he was part of the Justice League origin. That's what Geoff Johns chose to do.
But
so his origin spawned off of the Justice League events from Darkseid. Plus he never had the boom tube capability that he has now. Like he has Apocalypton Mother Box technology in him. Even in the movies, it's acknowledged, but when he was a Titan, he never had that.
No. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it makes him almost invincible as far as like what he can do.
I just think it would have been interesting to kind of show something like that. I hear on podcasts a lot of people just not enjoying Cyborg in Justice League. It just makes me wonder if they would have told a story that would have incorporated more previous continuity, because he's so associated with Teen Titans that maybe that would have been more accepted if they would have done that different.
I'm sure in the movie, when they release it on DVD, it'll show some of his background, as in the movie they skipped it, a lot of it. Mm-hmm. But they did show his conflict, like, I'm a monster type thing, which has always been an aspect of Cyborg.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
He's always felt like an outsider. He was in the Super Friends, too. A lot of people forget. He did have his own Super Powers action figure.
Speaking of toys, I never had him.
I don't have him either. But he was in... they were like buddies in the Super Friends, Firestorm and Cyborg. They were two characters that hung around in the cartoon. And they had like a whole season with them. And back then they treated him like a monster too. So he kind of, in the animated world, he kind of was, before Teen Titans Go, if you want to count that, he was in the Justice League.
Yeah, right. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good pick.
Yeah, it was something that you didn't have to invest a lot of time into too, so it was a quick read.
Yeah.
So what do you, either you or Chris could go next.
You can go ahead, Rob.
Oh, okay. Let's see here.
Don't be so surprised.
I'm surprised, yeah. All right, so I'm gonna cover the best. Now keep in mind I haven't read many, but this is the best Neil Adams written book that I've ever read. It's called Valeria the She Bat, number one.
Okay.
And
I
it's by
actually have that.
It's a Windjammer comic, which was a division of Acclaim when they owned Valiant. And this is in Neil Adams' creation. I think the forget Mike, you probably know this, but Windjammer was that like creator-owned stuff.
Windjammer was creator-owned Acclaim Val
Yeah.
slash Valiant launched stuff.
Okay,
He
right.
had
'Cause it
launched a couple of things, but I think this came after the continuity version in 1993, which launched
this is
Valeria Shebat.
okay. Yeah, I've never seen this before. I've never seen any other comic books of her before, but you're right. This is 1995. And, it's definitely it's saying that it's all copyrighted Neil Adams. So he definitely, you're right. He owns this. So basically it's
It's a
just
weird
what it
title,
sounds
though.
like. Yeah. And you know what? I have to say this issue, it wasn't bad. I mean, we've talked about that Batman Odyssey or now I'm that new Dead Man I've been reading and I just can't I
You
have
need
trouble
you
even
you you need
understanding
to
what he's
re you
doing.
need what you need to do is read old Dead Man, because he drew it, he didn't write
Right.
it.
I'm telling you that that new Dead Man. You haven't read it yet, have you?
I haven't read it, but I've just gone on a Dead Man kick with
Yeah.
the they had a sale on Comixology, and I bought all the old Neil Adams books on there, and I also bought the New 52 one, which I reread that one, and damn, that story's good.
Which one is that?
It's the one that was launched in DC Universe Presents. It started off with
Oh,
Dead
okay.
Man and then went to Challengers of the Unknown, and
Yeah.
the more I think about it, that was one of the better titles, God, that nobody was buying. Nobody
Well, it
bought
was
that.
fun to see. There's some people that just like to see, an anthology with like just different characters in every issue, and I happen to be a person like that. So you are
Yeah,
too, but.
DC Universe Presents was amazing, 'cause it explored characters that obscure characters. It had like Vandal Savage, you had a Vandal Savage arc, you had Dead Man, you had Challenger of the Unknown, you had a Black Lightning Blue Devil.
Yeah.
It was a good book, and I wanted to read more Dead Man, and for some reason I got this itch, and I was like, you know what? I want to read that one before I jump into the old Dead Man, and I did not regret it. It was really good, 'cause there's people that hate Dead Man, and I think he's fascinating. He's like a Quantum Leap guy before Quantum Leap. Like, he's jumping into bodies and changing things for these characters,
I've
and
never been a
he's
huge fan
bound
of
to
him,
the
but I
I
think that
love him.
he's a challenging character, I think, to write. And he's probably an easy character that if you're not writing a good story that you could mess him up. That I think that, that that's the
I
problem.
disagree. I think he's easy to write, because
Really?
to me, the story revolves around the situation. Like, your story revolves it fa falls into like the Quantum Leap type weekly episodes. It's like you're jumping into somebody else's body, and you're controlling that body in whatever situation. You could have a courtroom drama one, you could have a crime drama another one, you could have technology one and another one. To me, the possibilities of you being able to take over somebody's body, the storylines are endless. To me, I could write a dead man story, and I think I could come up with something new every episode, every issue.
I've never.
Like, did you read Dead Man, the House of Forbidden Love, or whatever that one was called?
Oh, well, I was just gonna tell you. I mean, I've read Dead Man and been neutral on many of them, but that particular one was absolutely fantastic.
If you thought that was fantastic, you need to read Kelly Jones, Dead Man. Where he was drawing, I can't remember who wrote it. Oh, Mike Barron, I think. Mike Barron. Mike Barron Jones. The sale's still on Comixology.
What year about was that?
Those were in the 90s, and they were deluxe format 2-issue books. And there's a set of 4 of them. No, sorry, there's a set of 2 of them. And they're amazing. If you like that one, you should get those deluxe. And it paid tribute the latest one that if you love that story, you're gonna love these ones.
Mm.
Yeah, they're amazing.
I see it here. After Death.
Yeah, the 2 stories were collected, so there is a collected edition that has all of that stuff of the deluxe formats in there.
Yeah, I didn't. I never. I don't have those.
But it sounds like you fell into the Campbell camp. Like Chris Campbell hates Dead Man. Like,
well, but I don't
like
hate
him.
It's just I don't automatically. I don't love him as a character, so it has to be a story that I happen to become interested in. And like the new one, that House of Forbidden Love was amazing, but a lot of the other stuff I don't know. It just hadn't appealed one way or the other.
I am a huge fan of Sarah Vaughan. She is becoming one of my favorites because she wrote Alex and Ada and a couple other things. And she's a fan of the romance novel, and she writes her books like it's a romance book. And that's what made that Dead Man thing special, is because she took 2 DC properties, Dead Man, and then there was a book called The Dark Mansion of Forbidden Love. And she combined both of them into a story, and she did a hell of a job, I tell you.
Oh, it was amazing.
She is good. And the art was amazing. It was it was just a fine piece of work.
Yeah.
But back to Valeria Shebe.
Oh, yeah. So okay.
Do you own both issues?
I only found issue 1 in the 50-cent bin, so.
Okay. And that you. To be a completist, then, you need to get from 1993 number 1 and 5, because number 2 and 4 were never published. I don't know how that happened. But and then you only have 2 issues in the Windjammer, so.
That's very strange.
You can have a full collection of Valerie.
Yeah.
I only own the continuity one.
Oh, that's right. Now that you're saying that, I do recognize that as being that older one. I can picture the cover in my head now that you say continuity.
Yeah, because it was an event. It launched out of an event called like Death Watch 2000 or something like that. Yeah.
Well, in this first issue here for Windjammer, it basically just starts with a family leaving a movie theater and a bunch of like strange looking like werebats start attacking them, and Valeria saves the family and actually fights off these werebats. after that she hears that the last one that is still alive says that that they're gathering money. They were stealing money and just vandalizing things and killing people for their master, Lith Casti. And this brings her, and then it's obvious that she knows who this is. But before it goes any further, you get the next scene is like this big, huge party that's going on. And looks like everyone's just kind of hanging out and everyone's waiting for Valeria to come. Apparently this was like some sort of party for her. And she shows up 2 hours late, and everyone is just staring at her, and everyone's making comments, like just has like thought bubbles and comments just from like every person as she's walking by. And she looks normal in this, by the way. She doesn't look like the She-Bat with the wings and stuff. She just actually looks normal. So you get the impression that obviously she can change shape from being like a female bat looking person to a regular looking person. And so she calls over this big brute of a guy called Rilla, and it turns out that that's her brother, and they start talking, and she mentions that this werebat mentioned this Lithcasti and asks if he remembers who that is. And then it goes to a flashback of this guy Rilla, and he's called Rilla because he can turn into a gorilla man. He doesn't look just like a gorilla, but he kind of looks like a weird gorilla. And it shows him and two others, one that looks like a hyena and one that looks like a werewolf, attacking all these bats like in an underground cave. And what they were doing was they were going after to try to rescue Valeria from this Lithcasti, who is this huge like demon bat. So they eventually get to the thing is like kind of in Neil Adams fashion, kind of all over the place, because after they fight off some of these werebats, they keep going, and this huge kind of, I guess it kind of looks like a dinosaur, but it has six legs instead of four, starts attacking them out of nowhere. And then just before he's going to chomp down and bite them, some gold robot shoots the dinosaur and stuns him and knocks him over. And they start calling over to this gold robot to try to get him to come speak to them or join them. And he turns around and goes the other way. And the werebats are going in a different direction. So they forget about the robot and turn towards the werebats. F you. So
did you just say like, F you to somebody?
No, I said I love you to Allie.
Oh, okay.
And so you know, there's a page and a half with a dinosaur, a page with a robot that seemed to have nothing to do with a story whatsoever. So I don't know if, you know, this is addressed more later on, but like you said, Mike, there's only one more issue of this one, so who knows. But anyhow, they end up getting to Valeria just as this demon bat Lithcasti is going to defile her. And Rilla shoots at him from behind and basically incapacitate, is that right?
Yep.
The demon bat and rescues Valeria, and then it goes back to the present and it's just them at this party again, and she says, "You remember Lithcasti?" And he says, "I remember. Why?" And she says, "I'm back." He's back, and he drops his glasses and breaks them, and that's the end of the first issue. So honestly, it's not the best comic. It was okay. Mike, doesn't make me want to run out and get other issues of this character, but it was fine for what it was. But in terms of the few Neil Adams comics I've read, this was the best written of his comics, but it still probably is a little below average. But it was entertaining enough. It would be like a 3 out of 5, but a low 3 out of 5.
I think he's one of those artists that knows how to draw, but he doesn't know how to write. I mean, he doesn't know how to write right for the masses, I'll say that. So maybe he has his niche for certain people, but for like the majority of people that read his stuff, they don't like, a lot of people just don't like it. They don't get it.
And that's where I am for the like only, the only time a lot of I times I just ever, don't understand ever, what's going on.
Yeah, it's outrageous. It's like Kirby-esque, but it's not grounded like Kirby-esque. It's like just out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's bizarre. Like the Superman one, I can't remember what it was called, but I think Tony Bedard started co-writing it with them, like with issue one, and I was like, hey, that's pretty good. And then it like went off the rails because Tony Bedard wasn't around after issue two, and I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, I had started that series as well and didn't go much further. Can't remember what it was called either, but yeah, I know what you're talking about. But I don't know.
Me neither.
I'd like to get it because I have most of the claim stuff. The only thing I have to fill is a few Windjammers.
Mm-hmm.
So just for being a completist on a dead universe stuff, because they had that plus the Crime Noir line, and I have most of that. And they had, you know, the Valiant line. Of course, I have all of that. I'd like to complete it. And then the continuity one, I never could get into it, like, as far as, like, reading it. But artistically, all the artists that he hired were, like, clones of him. So, like, if you look at Megalith or any of those books, and he's not drawing it, he hired artists that mimicked his style. So they all look like Neil Adams books.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you know, I'd like to complete it just because of what it is, but I don't necessarily like them.
I don't understand what happened to it. Why is continuity go from 1 to 5? So where's 2, 3, and 4?
I don't know the history of it. I don't Valor. I'm not a. I don't know continuity very well. I know he launched it during the time where comics were big during the explosion, and I don't think his books took off like he would have liked.
Mm-hmm.
Like they just didn't have the salesmen, the sales that a lot of the other studios did. Because yeah. the 90s were big for experimentation and new universes and stuff like that.
I mean, well, yeah, because it, everything was over. Selling. Yeah.
But before I get back into continuity, I'd like to finish like new universe stuff because I find that stuff way more enjoyable in terms of reading. And I don't have a full collection of the Jim Shooter new universe stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't either.
Chris. Cold Feet.
Christopher, are you there?
Maybe his feet got cold and Hello. He had to...
Hi.
That time I was just muted. yes. You want me to talk about a comic book?
Yes, talk about a comic book. Or a TV or whatever
it's
you
up
want
to you.
Talk about.
Yeah.
Actually, you want to hear... I can talk about comic book, but you also want to hear my... sounds like I'm going to launch into a song or something. My end of the year report on comic book reading.
Yeah.
I would like to.
So I talked about before how I would keep, how I keep track of my reading. And since today is the last day of the year, it's appropriate time to look back. I end up reading only 688 comics this year.
Really?
Which is down from last year of 816, which was down from the previous year, 2015, of 1,359. So I'm trending downward. Eventually, I'll just.
What is taking the place of that time? That's what I'm curious about. You're filling it with something.
Yeah, others. I mean, a variety of things, but I'd say like over the last several years, I go through periods of being more into gaming.
Like than, video games.
Yeah. What do you mean? Is that video games or
yeah, video other
games.
Games.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So. And I've kind of had a rotation where it happened over the last couple of years. Tends to be during the winter, for whatever reason. I'll go and won't read comics that much, and will mostly play video games in that time period, in that like same period, like leisure time.
What games are you playing? Just out of curiosity, because I never thought of you as a gamer.
Oh, all kinds of stuff. I don't know where to.
Like, is it on a platform or is it a computer?
Oh, mostly platform. Yeah, I don't really do much. I don't really do PC gaming because I'm already on a PC all day.
What is the platform?
PlayStation and different PlayStations, different Nintendo systems. Mostly those two. I tend to like Japanese games more, but I play some Western releases too. But and it varies from
what's
like.
What's one of them are you in this year?
Retro stuff to newer stuff depends.
Do you have a first generation Nintendo then?
No, I mean I tend to play like I don't have any old, real old systems. There's different ways to play, like you know re-releases and stuff. But I just meant that I'm not necessarily like trying to keep up with date with the most current stuff or anything. Just.
Mm-hmm.
Retro video game segment. There we go.
I know.
Yeah, I can do that. So this year was kind of the same as last year in that regard, where a lot of the comic books I read, a lot of those 800 comic books were read between May and, I'm in the wrong year. Whereas between April and August, like those 5 months, is it, was where a majority of that stuff, of the comics were read. And that was kind of similar to last year, where last year it was from May to like mid-November, where I did most of my comic readings. So, I don't know, it's just weird how I'll go through phases. My wife's kind of used to it, where it doesn't mean that, like, if 2018 is anything like the last couple of years, it'll be at some point, like I'll get super into reading comics again, and I won't be playing video games that much. So I don't know, maybe it just keeps it fresh for me. But so that was my end of the year total, and that averages out because to about 13 comics per week because of all the weeks where I didn't read that much, but. It was probably the most dominated by DC year that I've ever had, which like 74% of the comics I read this year were DC. And then the next highest was Marvel, like 19%. So very DC heavy year, I think partially because I was doing that, doing the like stuff on the blog or reading post-crisis comics in a row and stuff like that.
I really need to start tracking that. I'm tracking what I read in quantities, but I'm not like totaling it at the end of the year. I think that's a pretty interesting. For me, it would be fascinating to see, because my mood changes probably more than any of yours. But I think it would be fascinating to see what my moods are from year to year.
Yeah, and once you set up the spreadsheet, it's pretty easy. Like I just plug the numbers in each week, and the calculations are already set up to, to just go out automatically.
Yeah.
So it was pretty easy to set up, but yeah, I'll go ahead and I'll talk about a DC comic then, since why change things up now, you know?
Yeah. Well, you should read what you're into. I mean, like.
Oh, I do. I do. I mean,
if that's what you're interested in, that you get the most enjoyment out of something, I think you are in the mood for.
Yeah, I read whatever I feel like, and I just keep the spreadsheet just to look back. You know, if I didn't have it, then I would know vaguely. That the last couple of years I've been kind of doing a similar thing where I'm real into comics for half the year and then not so much the other half. And then, you know, I might think when I'm like in a phase right now where I'm not reading as much, I might think, oh, I'm not really into comics that much anymore. But I know it's not really the case. It's more of just like a temporary thing, like where I'm just going through my phases. But yeah, I mean, I was definitely really into DC
okay?
this year. Yeah, I was just stretching, sorry.
It sounded like you were trying to squeeze one out. It's like you had some constipation going on there, and you're like,
nah. I took care of all that before we recorded. So.
When I ate at that vegan restaurant, that's what happened to me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when your body's not used to that.
Not the one you took us to, but the natural
one.
Oh,
yeah.
I got constipated for 2 days.
Yeah, that's
not fun. Had to make
fun.
That noise.
So.
And I said, I know what rabbits feel like now.
Yeah. Now you know why their poops are just little
yeah,
tiny.
Yeah, like little circular things. That's exactly what happened.
Oh, we are messed up.
Yeah. So what DC comic you have for us?
So I was going to talk about Green Lantern Corps number 213. Speaking of the post-crisis time period, it's a
Is
story
that
called
Stanton?
Yep. For Want of a Male is the name of the story, and yeah, it's Joe Staton pencils with Mark Farmer inks. And then Steve Englehart was the writer. And this is picking up from the previous issue where Hal Jordan was kind of trapped in outer space by Hector Hammond and Star Sapphire. They teamed up and hatched a plot where they took control of Arisia, and this is a time period where the Green Lantern Corps are living on Earth, a small group of them, and you have Arisia and Hal Jordan in a relationship, and Kat Matui and John Stewart in a relationship, and so they took control of Arisia, and she told Arisia told Hal that she felt ill, and that they were going to head to her homeworld to figure out a cure to her problem. And she told them that she had her power battery so that they could recharge the rings on the way there. But then she deserted him. And when his ring ran out of power, the battery that he was holding the battery and he had turned out to be a fake. And so as far as they, when this issue opens, they think that they have been successful in killing Hal Jordan. But as is usually the case when it comes to your supervillains teaming up, there are issues there with Hector Hammond. You know, he's wanting to take control of the situation and doesn't trust Star Sapphire and her being a female, and Star Sapphire just adds to it by not treating him very well. And she's really into the like whole dominance thing of Arisia. Once they bring her on the ship and stuff, like makes her wipe the floor with her hair and kiss her boot. And while this is all going on, Kat Matui and John Stewart are on honeymoon, and Kilowog has been kind of like on this journey of discovery, like understanding Earth and understanding himself, and there are issues prior to this where he was in the USSR thinking that, you know, communism might be a good system, but then feeling betrayed by what he actually saw there. And so he's actually, while this is going on, is in Nicaragua trying to find a place that actually where real socialism is going on. I think we definitely can kind of see like some of Steve Englehart's own like political ideas and interests kind of coming through in that part of the story. But and then finally you also have Chip and Salak, who are in Kenya, and they are trying to find Dr. Ubix, which is another one of like the same species as Chip.
I miss Chip.
he's pretty funny. I mean, it's pretty odd that they, you know, have basically like a chipmunk Green Lantern. But the main story is the Hal Jordan plot, and Hector is kind of getting sick of the way that Star Sapphire is humiliating Arisia. She, like, the latest thing that she's doing is making her, Arisia, just repeat, "I hate Hal Jordan," over and over and over again. Just as this is all going on, of course, Hal is still alive, so he comes blasting right through the wall of their spaceship, revealing that he has been onto things all along, before they even went into outer space, and he made it look like he was dying, because he actually had his own backup battery with him. But I like the reason that he was aware of what's going on. He says, "I knew something was wrong the moment Arisia kissed me. Only people as ignorant of normal male-female relations as you two would think I couldn't tell a genuine kiss from a put-up job." And I thought that was like very appropriate to Hal Jordan. If anybody would know like the difference between a real and a passionate kiss, would be him. And it's a nice commentary on Hector and Star Sapphire. So from there, sort of have a typical battle with, but it's there's a setback for Hal and when Hector gets control of his mind, and it's kind of put some irony to his criticisms of Star Sapphire's treatment of Arisia, because Hector, now that he has the opportunity to use Hal how he wants him, makes him crawl on all fours and uses him as like his horse, basically, to like walk him around the spaceship.
These are very strange villains.
Yeah, so they have a lot of issues. It's been escalating, the whole issue, and Hector and Sapphire basically end up being their own worst enemies, as they have just been nagging at each other this whole time, and their antagonism between the two of them just escalates to the point that they attack each other, and that gives the heroes an opportunity to get the upper hand, and it's kind of cool though, because it's mostly Arisia at the end of the issue that takes out the villains and she plugs her ears with earplugs that she makes out of makes with her ring that helps block the way that Star Sapphire was taking control of her, and Hal wakes up from his circumstances when she finally takes out the two of them. So it's kind of cool that even though she was the one that was kind of used to spring the plot, it's nice that Englehart gave her the opportunity to be the one to save Hal in the end. So yeah, it's a decent issue. Some of these Englehart issues from this time period can get a little bit like too much into like the real world stuff, which real world meaning like stuff that mirrors our own world at the time, but this issue was, I enjoyed this issue. So
very cool. That was a short run right after when they changed the name from Green Lantern to Green Lantern Corps, about 20 issues or something.
Yeah, yeah. Something like that, and then that
quite
and then
a few
they,
annuals.
Yeah,
like it kept going. It kept going past post crisis, but then they eventually did they did relaunch with the series that eventually became the Kyle Rayner one.
All right. Yep.
Well, they had the Green Lantern with the gray sideburns before that, right? The alcoholic.
Yep. Yeah, when they relaunched. I think that would have been like volume 3. It was
volume 3 was that, and then it turned into Kyle Rayner around issue 50, I think.
Yeah, after like the whole Hal Jordan like going crazy and stuff like that. But yeah, at first it was kind of just like Hal tired of being a Green Lantern and just kind of going on like a walkabout. He just kind of like he did with Green Ollie, Arrow back in the day, but on his own.
Yeah,
I liked that series. I enjoyed that.
That's good. A lot of people didn't though. It was the deconstruction of Hal Jordan. They turned him into an alcoholic, and then they made him Parallax. And then Kyle took over for many, 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 many years.
And then
Hal became the spirit of redemption, the Spectre.
Yeah, he saved everyone and then became the Spectre.
Yeah.
And then he was reborn.
So there, I've been, I change moods so often. Sometimes I'm in Marvel mood and sometimes in DC mood, and now I'm in a retro mood, so like I don't want to read new stuff, so it's weird. But I am going to talk about the She-Hulk, which is the Sensational She-Hulk that I'm reading. I don't own a lot of these issues, but I'm reading them on Marvel Unlimited, which let's do some questions. We have some questions. Speaking of, one of the questions is related to that. Austin asks, and you can all answer this, even though it seems addressed to me. He says that it appears I'm reading a lot of Marvel Unlimited lately. And he says, do you prefer old Marvel on iPad, trade, and original? So my answer to that question is I read Marvel Unlimited because I was on vacation, and traveling with an iPad is much easier. Plus, I could read in the middle of the night and not wake everybody up with a light. So reading on the iPad is very... Marvel Unlimited is really... I'm really enjoying it. Like, it was one of the best. It's $5.99 or whatever I got the deal with things that I've ever purchased. Because I read at least 40 books a month on Marvel Unlimited. So if you think of the value, I'm spending two comics worth reading 40 books, so that's a lot.
Oh yeah.
But I prefer iPad for convenience, especially if you guys tell me like read something, if it's on the iPad or digital, it's easier for me to do that than to go find a box, unless it's right. current. Like I can get to all the current stuff. I could get to the drawer boxes much easier than, well, Chris knows there's several boxes in the corner that have a lot of the old stuff that are stacked, and they're legacy boxes. They're not drawer boxes. So that means I'd have to lift, if I wanted to get this She-Hulk, I'd probably have to lift 4 layers of boxes and then find the box and then get to it. Whereas I could just go digitally and read it. So my preferred way is paper, because you get the context of time in paper. You don't get that digitally. You get the ads, you get everything, you get the full experience, you get the smell, you get the texture, you get the gloss of the cover, you get it works so much better single. Trades are nice because reading something continuously is pretty nice. Like I just reread Convergence, not the entire series, but the whatever it was, 8 issues or whatever it turned out to be of Convergence, and it read really, really well. I thought better than when I was experiencing it from month to month. So like trades work really well for that, for collecting like certain content in the time period. Like I love the Epic collections. So my answer is everything. Each one has its purpose. The most convenient is digital, in my opinion, because you can just dial it up and bring it up whenever you want. And if you want to reference a panel, you just tell me what panel and I can go look at it. In panel mode, I can go to it really quick. What do you guys think?
What was the exact question again?
Do you prefer to read old Marvel on iPad? I guess you can consider this like a Marvel Unlimited question.
Mm-hmm.
On iPad, trade, or original? What do you prefer?
Well, I mean, specifically to Marvel, that's really the only way I read Marvel, since I decided to, that was one way I was going to, like, keep my collection limited, was to, because of the existence of Marvel Unlimited, it gave me that option to just not really, I have a handful of Marvel trades.
You created a monster because you're the ones that got me into the damn Epic collections.
I know, and then I was like,
it's your fault, and then you just left. He left.
And I was like, you know what? I'm like, this is silly. These are already on Marvel Unlimited. I don't need to buy these. Have fun, Mike. Sorry, Bert. but those are nice. I do still have one. Well, I have the Black Panther one because I have a Black Panther one because that stuff wasn't on Unlimited, and then I have a Cloak and Dagger one that isn't officially an Epic collection, but might as well be. Same with the Son of Satan one, but anyways, experientially, like I like holding a trade, but for practical reasons, if it's available on Marvel Unlimited, then I think I'll just go with that. So. The actual experience of reading it, I always find paper to be more enjoyable, but most of the time the convenience of digital wins out.
All right, Rob, you're
next. Yeah, I think the reading it in trade is, I think, a nice experience. So I guess if you're talking older Marvel, I probably would say if I have a trade, I probably prefer to read it in a trade. I don't have Marvel Unlimited, and I read very few comics digitally unless I have to, meaning you guys pick something that I don't own. Or if I just, every once in a while, there's a book that comes along that I don't want to wait to actually get to read, like when the Rebirth one-shot special came, I didn't want to wait, so I read it. I bought it digitally, read it, and then I read it again when I got my physical copy. So really, digital is pretty much not, doesn't exist for me for the most part. It does to some extent that I have some, like I have pretty much the whole Spider-Man Masterworks on digital, but that's because Nick Wetmore kept on letting me know that they would put sales on Comixology for like $3.99 for a Masterworks. So I'm like, well, I can't pass that up, and I don't have all of these collected, so yeah. I bought them all.
I did the same thing recently for the Defenders Masterworks. They were $4.99. Yeah.
I mean, you just can't beat that.
I bought
that,
every
so.
Single one of them, even though I own the Masterwork. I own the Masterwork, and I own the original.
I don't have the Masterwork.
I love the Defenders so much, though, that like I know I'll reread them. Do you know what I mean? I'll pull it up digitally, and
I think Nick must get kickbacks from Comixology.
Like, he has to, because he copies, you know, he tags all those people on those sales. I appreciate them.
I appreciate them too, because when they're $4.99 for like 300 pages or something, you're it's a good deal, man.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, so I mean, there's a few that I have on there, but otherwise, if it's a comic that I really want to own, then, you know, I'll still get the physical copy, but I think I like reading. I like the experience of reading them physically on in trades.
So, speaking of Nick, he asked a question, and it's mostly addressed to you, Rob, but, I guess we could all answer it. For the new year, are you planning on reading any novels that are retro to change up the format a little bit?
I saw him post that. I probably won't be any retro novels. They'll probably be novels that came out in the past few years. I haven't read an actual book for almost a full year and a half. I used to be very, before kids, I probably would read, oh God, two or three books a month. And, but then when the kids, it wasn't right when the kids came, because I was reading at work, on lunch. And then there was a strike at my work, which me being a manager meant that I wasn't on strike. I had to work 12 hours a day. So there was just no reading pretty much anything. So, I fell away from it at that point, and I never started reading any books again. But then for Christmas, I got like, people bought me like four or five books. I'm like, I gotta get back on the book reading. So I've been on vacation this week, so I've tried to start reading books, but I don't think they're going to be retro ones that I'll cover here. They'll probably be new books.
How about you, Chris? Books.
It's quite possible. I mean, that's something else I do when want to use that in my leisure time. I'm not reading comics. I'm not real consistent with it throughout the whole year, but I did read some books this year. I don't know if any of them were old enough to qualify for the show as far as our definition of retro, but yeah, I don't really have a rhyme or reason to when it comes to reading novels. I don't like tend one way or the other to new stuff or old stuff. Just kind of what happens to strike my fancy. Or sometimes I just feel like reading something, feel like reading a novel, and just kind of like look around like until I decide on something. So.
Well, my answer will be the closest to the yes for me, because my love for the hard case crime, I think, is going to cross over into the novels, which I ordered a few, and of those Queries books, by Maxwell and Collins. So I think this year I'll be reading a novel, and they're older books. Even though they're repackaged,
right.
They're repackaged with a new cover, which the covers are what draw me to the damn property. They say covers cannot. I mean, back in the day, a cover used to sell a comic book. Well, it's actually selling me on a book, but they're amazing pieces of work, and I'm so into the crime noir. And Titan doesn't satisfy my need for it, so I might read some more of the stuff in books. I have some on order. I'm just waiting for them to come in.
Wow, so look at you.
Look at me, and there'll be retro because they're older books. So how about that?
Yeah, most of them. I mean, they have published some new stuff of a similar style, but they tend to mostly be old stuff reprinted. A lot of times stuff that's out of print.
Yeah,
for a long time.
They do Max Allen Collins. They do Michael Crichton went under another name before he became Michael Crichton, and they're republishing his stuff.
Well, I know Stephen King wrote at least
two or three of them.
Yeah, just for them that he wrote new stories. So those are more new. They're not
I didn't even know this until me and Bill recorded Geek Brunch, but Quarry had a series on Cinemax I wasn't aware of, so I'm going to be looking that up to see if I could watch it, because it's now a comic book, and the comic book is drawing me into more mediums. And of all the genres, it's that, because they did get me hooked on I did reread the series where the guy was turned into a man. I can't remember what hard case one that was, but they launched that with Michelle Rodriguez into a movie, and I went and watched the movie as well.
Oh, yeah. What was that?
I can't remember. It was The Assignment. The Assignment.
Yeah.
So it of all the genres, it is drawing me into other areas.
That's interesting.
For you to read a novel.
It is. It's bizarre.
I sent you guys one in our chat. You can pick out Mike.
Yeah, I saw that. I was looking at him last night, actually. I did look at this one. I got an Amazon gift card, and instead of getting a trade, I've been thinking of buying some of these novels.
Oh. I mean, the art on them are just so cool and retro themselves.
It's very reminiscent of men's adventure magazines in the 40s and 50s. So.
That's what I'm saying.
It's very awesome.
But
the content of the comics in that genre is so appealing to me right now. I don't know if it's just my mood that I'm in, but there's not enough comic to satisfy, so I might bleed over into a novel. How about that?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's cool. Yeah, actually, way before they ever did the comics, years ago, I was pretty into Hard Case Kimes. I actually have like a whole box full of their novels, and read a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, it's a genre that I've never poked into in other mediums until like now that I want to. Like there's always been, like, you'll get some Image titles that are crime noir. You'll get, like, I thought the Elmer Fudd Batman was very crime noir. There's certain titles that are Image. Acclaim had a crime line. There's so many of them that I've read and I've enjoyed that I want more. It's such a fascinating genre for me. I loved Peepland and Trigger Man, and whatever comes out from them, I get. I haven't read the Girl Who Handcuffed Houdini yet, but
that was good. First issue was good.
Look forward to it. So the Queries one we covered on Geek Brunch, and I really like that one. And there's a lot of I can't imagine there must be like 25 novels of Query books.
Yeah,
No
he's written a
idea.
lot. I've read one of them, or at least I've read at least one of them as a hard case crime.
And we've me and Bill have read a lot of Max Allan Collins in comic book form. He used to do Miss Tree for DC Comics, and we used to get Miss Tree Quarterly and all that stuff. So like I've read a lot of Max. Didn't Max Allan Collins do a Wild Dog too? I think he did.
He
I
wrote
gotta look it
Batman
up.
for a while. He reintroduced Jason Todd.
Yeah, he did. He created Wild Dog. So if you guys keep up with Arrow and you see that guy with the hockey jersey on and the Jason Voorhees mask, that's Wild Dog. He created that and wrote him. And it's a good series. It's only four issues, but is there a Wild Dog action figure? I should like one, but that's one character I would like to get a action figure because I like him. I like him in the TV show too. But yeah, that was a good question, and it's a weird answer because you guys read more than I do, and I think I'm gonna go into the retro this year. I'm not starting off like with a lot, but I did order the Stephen King Joyride, Joy something. I can't remember. You mentioned
Joyland,
Joyland, yeah. And then a couple of Max Allan Collins. The Michael Crichton ones look interesting, even though he was under another pen name.
yeah, I read one of those too. It
was
was
it
good.
good?
But yeah, if I recall correctly, it definitely is totally different than his stuff under his own name. It definitely fits the genre.
And speaking of Nerdy Legion, Martin asks, what was our favorite read of 2017? I guess you could say anything.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, boy. That's a tough one.
Yeah, I didn't see that one ahead of time. It would take me a while to figure that one out, I think.
I think mine was Batman Elmer
Really?
Fudd. Yeah, I have to go with that one. I really like that one.
I don't know that I can nail it down to a one single comic. I can't even think of. Oh God, I don't have any idea. I'm gonna have to sit and think about it, and maybe next time we get together, we can
Yeah,
I
it's
can talk
more,
about
those
it.
are harder questions to.
Yeah, because you know.
And then he said, what is your favorite read of 1997?
1997.
What came out in
Oh God.
1997?
20 years ago, he wants to know.
I'm pretty
All
sure I,
right.
if he means things we read in 97, I'm pretty sure I didn't read any comics in 1997, so.
Really? You weren't getting comics?
No. I mean, there was a long gap. I think maybe I started back into comics a few years after that. But from like the age of, let's see, I don't know. I mean, I was into comics when I was a kid for a few years, and then like all throughout like high school and stuff like that, I didn't have any interest.
I see. I see.
Is there a way to look up what came out in 1997?
There's got to be. Oh, I'm looking. 1997, the Heroes Reborn comics came out.
That wouldn't have been one of my favorite. I know
No, not me either, but it still was out.
I'll say it was one of my I was really excited for it because I was still a really big fan of Jim Lee and Liefeld. I will say that I liked the Jim Lee ones better. Like when he started Fantastic Four, it was pretty exciting. And the Iron Man, whereas Liefeld took over Cap and Avengers, it was a little more in your face. He did
I
create a
think.
new Bucky, a female character, which was interesting, and she was a robotic character.
Even back then, in 1987 when that happened, I only got Fantastic Four and maybe Iron Man. I know I didn't get Cap. I don't remember.
Well, if you go back to like Comic-Con, you could see what was published in 1997.
Yeah, I was just looking at
It's
that.
like Uncanny X-Men, Fantastic Four was big, Captain, well, like you said, Heroes Reborn.
Yeah.
It's hard to read that because oh, that was Amalgam too was going on. That was fun.
I didn't get it, really get. Oh, I got a couple of them. I only got maybe like two amalgams. I got that Wolverine Batman one. I don't remember what it was
There's
called.
that DC site that you use, Chris, that tells you like the chronological order of everything. Is it Mike's World of
Yeah.
Comics or something?
Mike's Amazing World of
Yeah.
Comics, yeah. It's not, yeah, he has more than DC too. You could look at that.
That's one site you could go to.
I'm
Everything's
glancing at a
a
bunch of covers and nothing is standing out to me as, boy, that was really good.
Yeah, I don't know if that was like the. I mean, that was kind of a time period where the industry was kind of recovering.
Well,
And.
Morrison's JLA was out. That was
Yeah,
pretty
that was
big.
just getting started, yeah. Or
Yeah, that was
around that
good.
time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird, man. DC
The
was getting their
Thunderbolts.
ass kicked specs. Oh, the
I liked the
Thunderbolts?
Thunderbolts. Yeah.
Yeah, they
I
were
see a
good.
Hulk here from 97 introducing the Thunderbolts. I like the Thunderbolts. I like the reveal because I
I
didn't
was late
expect
to that
that.
game, but I liked the Thunderbolts. That was a very unique team. It was a
Yeah.
very likable comic book.
Yeah, I did remember checking that out when I got back into comics, and it definitely had that classic writing style of having multiple plots going
Well, what
on.
was cool about it too is that I liked how even after the reveal, and you know that these are all used to be villains, I like how some of them you looked like, okay, they're doing this for a certain reason. They're still going to be villains. And then you start to see some other ones like, Beetle and what's her name? Songbird. The like, they're le starting to actually lean towards being actually, actual legitimate heroes. And it was nice to see that conflict between like those characters and like a Moonstone or a Baron Zemo that they're just doing this as, as a trick basically. And it was really interesting. I like that whole series, to be honest with you. So I'll say the introduction of the Thunderbolts. That'll be my answer.
There you go.
I'd have to do some digging.
Yeah.
Like what was
Yeah, I have no
happening at
idea.
Image at that time, and what was. I'd have to refresh my memory because the white dots are taking over as I get older. So, I think he had one more question. Oh, this is to Rob, and it's probably all only you can address because I haven't started reading it yet. But he's
What's that?
Martin asks, does Rob prefer original Youngblood or the current run?
I prefer the current run.
Haven't started it yet.
I wasn't a big fan of Youngblood actually in the old days. I bought the mini series and I probably bought a handful after that, but I didn't buy a lot. I just wasn't all that interested in it. But it's funny now buying this new one. It's like I don't know if it's intentional or not because I hadn't read anything in between. So to me, it seems like this mystery, like, how did why is Bad Rock a certain way or what happened with Shaft or and it might not even be a mystery. It might just be whatever happened in the previous series. But because I haven't read it, it's like even more interesting to me that makes me want to go back and read some of this older
Yeah.
stuff to kind of
I
catch up the
recently
gaps.
completed it, I think. I completed the Bad Rock, Youngblood Strike File. There was another Youngblood. I think God, I can't remember what it was. So I own it all and I've read it all. My favorite was the obscure one that launched that that never finished, and it was the awesome Arcade Comics. You had like Robert Kirkman writing and a couple of other people writing for his company, and it was really good. I would like to know what happened. Like, why did it fail so early? It's like you get one or two issues of it, and then yeah. It's dead. But
you covered, really, I run. Think, one or two of them on one of our episodes at one point, didn't you? Or am I thinking of something else?
I think I did. Because yeah. I had bought – I just recently said, hey, I would like to finish – my Image books of the first incarnation, and I went out and I did most of it. I still got to do some Wildcats to finish it and maybe some Wet Works. So what I focused on is Extreme Studios. I just finished Eric Larson's stuff. Like, I have a full run of all his stuff, and I'd like to finish my Spawn run eventually. Those are going to be tough though, because they're not cheap books.
Yeah.
Especially after like six, they like mass produce like 1 through 100. There's a lot out there, but then you get into the range where it wasn't so popular, and it's hard to get a hold of them. Which means I'm gonna be spending $10 a copy, probably, with shipping and everything, or even more in some cases. But those are good questions.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's see. Do we have one more, and I'm just forgetting about it? Let me check. I think Kyle asked a question, and I just having trouble finding it. That's what happens when I ask him too early. Oh, his is a good question. Favorite comic book imprint that is no longer around.
Well, I'm.
Valeria Shebat for Rob, I'll tell you.
No,
that
no.
was his favorite one that's no longer around and never finished.
That's not gonna be mine. I think that actually, because I'm learning more about it, and I've only read like a handful of issues, but I can't wait for trades hopefully to start coming, is probably Milestone for me. Because I only read a few of the issues, and I'm hoping that when they relaunch it, that they'll put the old stuff in trade, and then I'm gonna buy it all.
Yeah, you stole my answer, but I think it's the same. And I just recently dove back into Milestone when I completed it, so I didn't buy it all initially. I bought maybe the first 15 issues of all the main titles, and then I dropped off. And then when it came back, I started to, and it came back in pre-52, like they started doing Zombie, and they were merging some of the characters into the Justice League of America with McDuffie. And matter of fact, he was the one that was bringing him back. They launched Milestone Forever, which was a two-issue deluxe formatted book that came out. That's when I said, hey, you know what? I really need to dig back in and finish it. And I finished reading Cobalt, which was pretty damn awesome. And then I got into Hardware, and I haven't finished it yet, but I think I got to like issue 30 or something like that. But yeah, Milestone is definitely of all the companies. The other one I really like, but I didn't like it when they merged with Marvel, is the man, I'm going to have a top three. CrossGen, CrossGen is another one that I would like to see come back. Not as Marvel, but as what they were. CrossGen, and what was the other one? Oh, Ultraverse. Before they merged with Marvel, they were fantastic. Like Prime and Hardcase and all that stuff. That was a great universe. Sludge, The Strangers. I would love to see that come back. So I have a tie, triple tie. But of all of them, I think Milestone. I feel like there was so much there that I want more of. So they're supposed to come back.
Yeah.
But it's been
they announced it in October.
They were supposed to come back a long time ago. They were supposed to be back in 2017, and it never happened.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I'll see it when I believe it. Daryl was telling me last night that they at New York Comic Con they showed like what the titles, the initial titles were they're launching with.
Yeah, so. They did. Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll see them. Did you say October of 2018?
No, I said it at the New York Comic Con this past October. That's when they mentioned that they were going to bring it back.
So hopefully we'll see something in this year. We'll see a relaunch.
I hope so.
And maybe, like you said, maybe some it would be nice to see an omnibus or something to say, here's all of Hardware's stuff.
I mean, if they're not going to do that when they relaunch, like, when would they do it? That's the best time to put that stuff out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, people would be interested. So I hope so, because I really want to dig in and read a lot of this stuff. And I had a handful of static issues. And then in the 50-cent bins, I found some Icon and Hardware and a couple of Blood Syndicate. So I have maybe like 5 or 6 total issues of Milestone. And this would all be brand new to me if I could get this stuff in trade.
Yeah. How about you, Chris?
First one that comes to my mind that, as far as a publisher goes, that I think maybe is back around is, but not really in the same way as First.
Mm-hmm.
All those different, I didn't really discover them until after the fact as an adult, but it's had a really, like, a ton of different, creator-owned properties at the same time that were really interesting, and at a time where, you know, in the 80s when they didn't, you didn't have as many of those around. Just like Mike Grell's work there, and just a lot of different interesting creator-owned properties.
Star Slayer, yeah. And John Sable was there, right?
John Sable, right.
I get confused between... The two that I get confused with is Eclipse and First. So I always get them mixed up. But John Sable is freaking amazing. And I mean, the two that you mentioned, Star Slayer. Speaking of Windjammer, they released remastered Star Slayer books in Windjammer. And I was I was rereading those. They have extra pages, too. It is really good.
Yeah, I mean, they had Badger, American Flag,
Mike
Dreadstar.
Badger, yeah. Mark Starlin, Jim Starlin's Dreadstar, yeah.
Grimjack.
Grimjack was good. That's weird. That's Ostrander, right?
Yeah, Nexus, Sable.
That's Steve Rude.
So we already said John Sable, but so yeah, I mean, they were a cool publisher.
I'm kind of blind on the Nexus. I have a lot of Star Slayer and John Sable, and Grimjack I bought, but it's the remastered IDW stuff. I don't have the original issues. Those are good answers, and that was our last question. So I'll jump into my next book, and I'm going to do a lightning round because we're running kind of late. So I'm going to lightning round what I kind of did over the past week is I read a lot of Sensational She-Hulk, John Byrne, and it's a ridiculous book, and it does experiments like she talks to him like Deadpool, and she's like Deadpool would, where she's talking to you. And she's saying, John, can you draw me so I can get from point A to point B? And they'll like have her go walking across panels. And in one scene, she's like, she's ripping her own page, like their page of a comic book. And in the back of it, you see like a price, like Mile High, you know, like the ads they used to have to buy these issues of old books. So she like rips back and she sees all that stuff. In one issue, she fought. It was mimicking the original Fantastic Four. So, like, if you were reading along with Chris's Fantastic Four 1, 2, 3, 4, She-Hulk was like following that, but in a more comedic sense. When they introduced Dr. Doom, it turned out to be Dr. Bong in her world, and it was a fun issue though because she in that world she went into the like Land of the Lost, all the cartoons that I grew up with as a kid. Like she was in the Jetsons, the Flintstones. She even went into RoboCop. It was a very weird issue, but it was an interesting one. And then I really enjoyed like one of the series that is so bizarre that I really enjoyed is US One, which is like a trucking book, but it deals with demons and stuff on the eight wheelers, or what are they called? 10 wheel? I don't know, what are they called? The rigs.
Yeah, I know what you're
Tunnelers,
talking
yeah.
about. I know
I
what
don't.
you're
I
talking
can't even think of the term,
about.
it was. She had a crossover where she had to go into space with Razorback, who's an obscure trucker, superhero slash villain. They stole the space shuttle to the lover of US One, the guy who played the main character. Got married and she didn't know it, so she was trying to find her love interest and she went into space by stealing this shuttle and She-Hulk went with them and they fought a classic monster that was in Stan Lee and Jack Kirby's Monster Omnibus. So yeah, it's exploring a lot of obscure. They brought in Blonde Phantom, like a Golden Age character, and she's kind of like the secretary for the law firm that they there. They had an issue with Santa Claus, where they're discovering the mystery. He's trying to tell her how to she's a works for the DA, so she has to take down Australian murderer, and he's giving her clues. Saint Nick is, and she doesn't even know he's Santa Claus, I think, until the very end. It's pretty bizarre. And it has John Byrne drawing She-Hulk is amazing. Like she just looks fantastic. But
Yeah.
it's a ridiculous title. It works well for me, like reading in the middle of the night when I just want something light, before bed. Really good. And then talking about the white dots in my memory, I remember loving John Ostrander and Tom Mandrake Spectre, but I didn't remember a lot of the details. And I reread issues 1 through 12 over the break. And it's amazing because this is during a time the HIV broke out, and one of the main characters you don't learn until the very end that there's a woman, her name is Amy Biederman, and she starts seeing like Corrigan walking around, and she starts to think he's a ghost, and she goes to his office to try to figure out who he is. And his office is abandoned. It's right above Madame Xanadu's office. And he's seeking vengeance, and there's a serial killer killing people that have the HIV virus. And they're trying to prevent her murderer. And you learn that she caused a lot of HIV, so she was raped and got HIV. And then she just went out and transmitted to a bunch of men. So she created the killer that's after them. And it's just a tragic story from beginning to end. And it's pretty amazing.
I loved that, Ron.
That was another. So Nick pointed out $4.99 trades. They have 1 through 24 collected in trade. Volume 1 and Volume 2, and they were on sale for $4.99. It was so good to revisit that. And then last but not least, the Defenders, which I've learned more and more and more about Nighthawk, and I've always thought he was one of the most visually appealing characters. He's a dick. I mean, he is not heroic. Like, as I'm rereading him, I'm like, how did I ever like this guy? He grew up rich. His mom died, and then his rich father kind of abandoned him to the rich school systems where he was a spoiled, rotten brat. He's drunk. He kills his girlfriend in a drunk driving accident. He has a horrible. He's an asshole to the dean because he knows that his father gives money to the school and college, and he can get away with anything until he does the DWI, of course. And the Grandmaster, you know, speaking of, you know, those elders, is the one that helped him become Nighthawk, which is very interesting. And that's where he got Nighthawk into the Squadron Sinister. So he was a villain for a while. And that's why he has the powers like of 10 men, I think, at night. But during the day, he's just got regular powers in the jetpack. But he's such a whiner and stuff. But it's an interesting journey because they created a character that is not redeemable, in my opinion. But he's trying. He's trying to be a hero. But the headmen... there's something out of like the Human Centipede. I swear to God, they have a horror aspect to them where they switch minds and they remove brains, and they switched his brain with Shandu, who's one of the headmen, who was a magician. And so he poses as Nighthawk, and Doctor Strange finds about it and puts his mind into a deer that Hulk saved. There's a group of hunters that kill a deer, and Hulk just goes ballistic on them. They kill the mother of Bambi, he calls her. So you heard Hulk, Hulk goes ballistic. And they put his mind into there. And during this whole time, there's a Nebulon story arc that he's really powerful, and he's recruiting villains, like obscure ones, like Porcupine, Eel, and the Plant Man. And then it gets to the point where Valkyrie goes into jail because she trashes a restaurant. So it's like an episode of Cage Heat, where all the women are trying to beat her up and take advantage of her, and she won't take it. But her powers are kind of lame because they don't work against females. So I wonder if they'll ever get out of that, because I don't remember them ever getting out of that. But as I'm rereading it, maybe they will. There's so many interests. God, I love this Defender stuff. it's like 5 out of 5 for me. I'll finish all these volumes. I know I will, and just reread the masterworks. There's a reason why they're my favorite Marvel team. It's a nostalgia reason, because it's one of the teams I first collected. But they're so bizarre. Like, they don't belong to... They're not a team. They're a team that's there for convenience, but not because they want to be there. They're not like the Avengers or the X-Men or anything else you'll read. And Steve Gerber has a lot of social and political connotation in all this stuff. So, oh, God, it's so good. That's my lightning round, and I'm done.
You've done a lot of reading.
Yeah, I read about 20 issues, I think, of Defenders, 12 issues of The Spectre, and then She-Hulk. I probably read like 4 or 5, and I need to get they don't have all the issues on Marvel Unlimited, so I want to go purchase them. So I want to make that one of my next orders, is to get... Weren't you working on a collection of She-Hulk, Rob? Yeah.
Yes, I am. Yeah, I haven't done anything more with it recently, but I want to get that whole run.
Yeah, I want to get it, and not only that, but speaking of that run, Steve Gerber writes some of it. So you know, I've been on a Steve Gerber tear with Man-Thing and Howard the Duck. So it should fit in pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll let you guys go next. I'm done. I just wanted to do a lightning round because I read so much.
I'll just do my other one real quick, because I know we're kind of running late, and I actually have to go outside and shovel. But, okay, so the next one that I read was P.T. Boat Skipper Captain Storm, number 10.
Oh, nice.
Uh-huh.
It's one of the losers.
One of the losers. This one's from 1965. I actually am not even seeing any credits anywhere on here. So I don't know if that's normal or not, but yeah, there's no credits whatsoever. It's probably on in comic base, but I don't see it here. But the first,
it's Rob Carringer. You could almost say that with any war book, but
that's true. Yeah, that's true. But the
this one you said 10, right?
10, yeah.
Oh, it is Rob Kaniger with Irv Novak is the artist.
Okay. Yeah, it has two stories in here, and the first one is I think just really good, really well done. It highlights really the beginning of it is just highlighting the captain of a Japanese vessel and how is everything from his wife seeing him off at the docks and giving him like a prayer scarf and him getting on the boat and just like a montage basically of page after page of them going up against all these American boats and submarines and just defeating them one after the other. And even some enemy aircraft, and it's just one after the other that they're defeating. And they finally, towards the middle of the story, they manage to sink a submarine, and there's a lot of oil in the sea, and it makes a lot of a smoke. And so in the smoke is Captain Storm's PT boat. And they happen to see this Japanese vessel, and so they launch a torpedo and then back up into the smoke. So it hits the vessel, and this is the first time that this Japanese vessel seems to have been in any trouble. So Captain Storm gets his boat out of the smoke shortly after, just as the Japanese vessel starts attacking, just shooting into the smoke, figuring that this is a small American boat and they can easily overpower it. But he gets out before they do that and then turns and shoots two more torpedoes when they're close enough to the Japanese boat where they can't actually attack and shoot the torpedoes before they hit the vessel. So they hit the vessel, the whole boat ends up going into the ocean, but because of the explosion, it actually, they're so close to the Japanese vessel that the PT boat blows up as well, and shows Captain Storm swimming. He seems to be the only one from his vessel left. And then it shows the Japanese man. He's got a sword in one hand, and he sees the Japanese flag floating, and he grabs that and manages to find a tiny little sandbar that's probably 15 feet across and maybe 5 feet wide. And so he plants the flag there, and he's got his sword, and he sees somebody else coming. He's wondering if it's one of his allies, but it's Captain Storm, and he gets up on the sandbar as well. And Captain Storm has his gun, and he tries to shoot the Japanese man, but of course the gun's waterlogged, and it's not working. So the Japanese man starts attacking Captain Storm with the sword, and Captain Storm grabs the Japanese flag, and the guy cuts the flag in half with his sword, and as he's trying to land a killing blow on Captain Storm, Captain Storm takes the jagged end of the flag, you know, the stick, and kills the guy. And then a few minutes later, a different American vessel has come by and already picked up the rest of his crew who had survived, and they come and pick up Captain Storm as well. So I thought that was a pretty good story. The second one was a little goofy. It started with a American soldier tied to a tree, and the Nazis are planting what do you call them, landmines, all in the sand, and then driving away, planning on that he's going to be bait for you know other American tanks and so forth to come that you know going to come try to rescue him and then get blown up by the landmines. But it's weird. It seems like he's only there for a short period of time where a German airplane sees him and starts firing at him. So they're apparently not aware of this German tank that set up this plan. And they shoot him, they miss him, but manage to cut enough of his bonds that he's able to get out. He replants all of the landmines, and it's just a series of a German car pulls up, and he pretends to be still tied up, and then he starts fighting them, and then he falls down and shoots them, and they didn't hit any of the landmines. And then that German airplane comes back because he hears the guns going off, so he jumps into the German car and blows up the aircraft with the big artillery that's on the car. And it's just one thing after the other, really. And then another German tank comes back, or actually it was the same German tank comes back. And even though it's following where they thought that there was no landmines, it's still not hitting any landmines, even though he replanted them all over the place. Now they tie him up to the actual front of the tank. And on the way back, they hit a landmine, and he comes flying off of it, and he shoots. He manages to grab somebody's gun, and he shoots everyone that's in the tank, and then he starts walking away. So it was that one I really didn't care for. It was just like one implausible scenario after the other. But that first story I thought was pretty good with Captain Storm highlighted in it. I liked that one quite a bit.
Did you get that one in a quarter bin too, or what?
No, this one, I mean, it's not, I didn't get pay a lot for it, but I think it was $3 or $4. My aunt, who I didn't even really know that she knew that I really bought comic books, but on Facebook, she linked me to an auction, or not an auction, but a estate sale where people were selling a bunch of comic books.
Yeah.
And of course, if you don't get there first thing, there's like not much left. And, you know, I was there probably half an hour after it opened and like it was totally picked over. But I managed to get about four or five like $3 comics. And this was one of them. So it's
those estate sales, man. People get some really good shit. Like if you're like the first person there. Because they want to get rid of it, you know?
This is like in fine condition, maybe fine minus, but
That's perfect, though. Fine is a good condition book.
It was a beautiful, you know, I mean, it was really, you know, the pages look great, and it was fun to read it. This is one that I got months ago, but just been sitting on my to-read pile for any of the, you know, stuff that I bought that's older. So I figured I'd pull it out today and read. It was a good story. And it's the only Captain Storm that I own.
I only own like four of them.
Yeah, there's not a lot.
They're ones you don't see very often. Like
you'll see a lot of GI
Combat, Unknown Soldier, and Sergeant Rock. But Captain Storm was like, it's pretty obscure.
Yeah, it was a good story though. I mean, well, he's a good writer. I like most of the stuff that he does.
I think losers came from our fighting forces.
I think like you're right.
Sergeant Gunny or whatever they're called.
Yeah.
And the dog.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Chris, what do you got?
I got to go. That's what I got.
You got to go. Where are you going?
Yeah. To eat some lunch.
Okay. You want to do a lightning one?
No.
You don't
want to. No. I want to wrap it up. I'm hungry.
He's like, no.
Yeah, let's get going.
All right.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. Yeah, it's getting late. Like I said, I'm going to eat something, and I'm going to go out and shovel some of the – we had like a mini 20-minute blizzard yesterday where you couldn't see anything in front of you, and then it just stopped.
Yeah, I got to go walk Carly. She hasn't woken up, though, since every time we board her, she wants to sleep an entire day.
Really?
Yeah, it takes her a day or two to recuperate. I don't know what they do to her if she sleeps with one eye open all the time. They love her there, though. Like, she's popular. Everybody knows her name and they know her mannerisms. She gets the cuckoo eyes with them. It's.
Well, maybe she just really like goes crazy in terms of being super active when she's there,
Well, they
and
say
then
that they call her a burst of energy because, well,
yeah.
you remember I tell her she gets the pupils dilate and she goes nuts? I imagine she does that like all the time with those people.
Right? So she
Yeah.
comes back home,
She's
she needs to rest
exhausted. She
again.
needs to
Yeah.
recuperate. But I gotta go
Absolutely.
for a walk, even though it's like 20 degrees outside.
Mm.
I haven't walked. I've gained 5 pounds. Chris needs to eat. Are you
It's
going out to eat, or are you just gonna eat there?
just eating here. Yeah, me
Well,
too.
Happy New Year's, guys. I hope 2018 is very good to both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
You too.
same to you
Happy
guys.
New Year. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, I'm just gonna do. You can hang up, Chris. I'm just gonna do the outro if you want. But at MythMakingETC at Twitter, at Mike Myers Brunch, and at Rob Krieger on the Twitter machines, and geekbrunchpodcast.com is how you can reach us on the website, and you can leave comments there. And on Facebook, it's Geek Brunch Podcast, and click the like button. You can follow all the episode threads there. And I think that's it. And if you get a chance, leave an iTunes review, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. And it's your turn, Chris. So when you get a chance, pick a book.
All righty.
All right.
Happy New
Happy
Year.
New Year, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.